favorite scary movie?
Halloween. You know, the one with the guy in the white mask who walks around and stalks babysitters.
Did you really put her liver in the mailbox? Because I heard that they found her liver in the mailbox next to her spleen and her pancreas.
If you hang up on me, you'll die just like your mother. Do you want to die, Sydney? Your mother sure didn't.
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a horror movie. Number one, you can never have sex. Number two, you can never drink or do drugs. And number three, never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
Let's get another beer. You want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back.
Don't you blame the movies. Movies don't create psychos. Movies make psychos more creative.
Hi, this is Adrienne King, Alice from Friday the 13th, and the hysteria continues.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 48, I believe. So we're heading very fast up to the half century mark. And we'll tell you what we're going to be covering next time. We've still got to decide on the Magic 50. So maybe some people could send in some suggestions of what film they would like us to cover, perhaps. What do you reckon, guys? Would that be a good suggestion?
Yeah. For me.
What?
Well, no, because I think it's my choice for number 50, because Nathan's going next with a Christmas pick, which we'll tell you what it is at the end of the show. But I think I'm right in thinking, Joseph, aren't I, that I'm down for number 50.
Yes, you are down.
I am down for number 50. So what I thought I might do is throw it open, and I might just ignore all the choices, but why not throw some out and see if any tickle my fancy, as it were. But this time, we are going to be looking at the film The Revitalized, and it's controversial, I kind of guess, in some ways, because it also launched a lot of films that some people like and some people don't like, but Wes Craven's Scream, which is Joseph's pick. So how are you today, Joseph?
I am good. And yes, Mr. Ghostface, I do enjoy a good scary film from time to time.
Yes, indeed you do. And indeed we all do. And Nathan, how are you this fine morning?
I'm good. And yes, Mr. Ghostface, I do enjoy a good scary movie from time to time.
Well, Eric, do you enjoy a good scary movie?
Can you come back to me in 10 minutes? I'm just watching the end of Carry On Camping. It's on ITV at the moment.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay.
Is it this one?
Excellent. Well done, Nathan.
Well, it seems a little bit rickety, Doctor.
Is it? Yes, but of course it's fairly easy to get it up. It's getting it to stay up. That's what counts.
And of course that is from Carry On Camping, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, Eric? And it's just finished, actually, so now you can come back to me.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Oh, my goodness. Kenneth Williams just made an innuendo.
I know. Yeah. Wonders will never cease. But how are you, Eric, anyway?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Yes. Well, we've had a bit of a double ender, haven't we, Eric?
we have had a double ender, yeah.
Because yesterday we recorded two commentaries back-to-back, didn't we, for Vinegar Syndrome's upcoming double DVD release of Death by Invitation and Savage Water.
Yes.
And that, well, hopefully they turned out okay. They sounded okay. Whether or not anyone will like them, I don't know. But I imagine if you've been listening to Hysteria Continues, you'll probably kind of know what it is, what kind of commentaries they'll be like. Very much like these podcasts. So, but without
this is a conflict of interest. But yes, I think they turned out just fine.
Thank you, Joseph. And they're out. When are they out? Is it beginning of February?
According to Vinegar Syndrome, February 2nd's the street date, so mark your calendars.
Mm. And also, if they do well and people like the commentaries, we might be doing some more. So, yeah, so keep an eye out for that. Right, okay, the other things we've got today, obviously we're doing Scream, but also we're going to be looking at our favourite top three scenes from post-Scream slasher movies. Which would quite be an interesting list, I think. But before that, should we talk about our recently seen? Who would like to go first? There's one film that we're going to talk about, Bloody Homecoming, perhaps at the after we've done the rest of the recently seen, which is the movie that our friend Jake Helgren wrote, and he very kindly let us have a sneak preview of. So we're going to talk about that in a little while, do a mini review of that. But first up, Joseph, what have you been watching recently?
Well, I've been on another one of my found footage fiascos. And the first one I watched was Eyes in the Dark. I'd been looking for this one since 2010, and I finally obtained a copy. And it starts out well, and it goes along fairly well, but it's got the problem is that a lot of these found footage movies, they're intentionally vague, and it's kind of maddening. You want to see something. And for this one, the problem is that when you actually finally do see the something that you want to see, it's not really worth the build-up. It's basically, you know, a couple of people in some dime store, you know, costumes, and you're like, that's it? And then just the movie ends. So, yeah, Eyes in the Dark is okay, but it's just okay. Kind of cheap. I'd say skip it if you see a copy somewhere. There's certainly better found footage films than this one.
Okay. Okay, all right. Well, and is it another found footage one you were talking about as well, which is a bit better?
Yeah, I watched two more. This one, the next one I watched was the Lost Coast tapes. It's about this documentary crew who go out looking for Bigfoot. They get in contact with this hunter or environmentalist or something. I can't remember what he did, but he claims to have a corpse of a Bigfoot's like a Bigfoot offspring, like hidden in a cave. So, you know, they don't believe him. So they're going to go up there to kind of debunk it. And, you know, they get up in the woods and all kinds of weird stuff starts happening. You know, they hear growling noises in the night and they see quick glimpses of things running through the woods. And this one is actually really, really good. You can tell they put a lot of effort into it, and there's a lot of good, you know, neat, camera tricks, you know, as most found footage movies, just basically wobbly cameras and running through the woods. But this one, they use a lot of body mounts for when people are getting dragged through the woods, and it has all these, excuse me, kind of neat camera angles. And for a found footage movie, it's actually really gory. There's some really good death scenes. What really helps this film is a really good, the ending is kind of, well, I'm not going to spoil it, but it's a pretty good twist, and that's all I can really say about it. It certainly surprised me, and it's another one of those where, oh, I just wish they'd shown about 20 more seconds of footage because I really wanted to get a better glimpse of this. But overall, you know, that's forgivable because this one was a lot more fun than the last one.
Well, I've heard that...
And the build-up was a lot better.
Well, I've heard very good things about Toya's performance as Bigfoot.
Yes, she was quite good.
Well, we're only 5 minutes in.
What? I haven't mentioned her being booed.
Jingle bells, Justin Smells. Na, 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 na.
I haven't mentioned. Now you've brought it up, Eric. Toya was booed.
Was not booed
For turning on Britain's worst Christmas decorations.
The Christmas decorations were booed. Toya was not booed.
Okay, well, it's. But anyway, I just thought I'd put that out there because people might be concerned.
Yeah, well, yes. Just to let people know that Toya was not booed, it was the Christmas decorations, and she had nothing to do with them.
Well, she agreed to turn them on, didn't she?
Yeah. But she didn't set them up.
But she's in Panto this year, isn't she?
She's always in Panto.
Okay. Anyway, well...
You're just jealous.
Why would I be jealous of Toya being in
Panto? Shut up, that's why.
Okay, right, well, thank you. Sorry, Joseph, sorry that Eric interrupted you there.
Hey!
What else have you been watching?
Why am I the Jan Brady every week?
Well, I think it's fairly self-explanatory.
Justin.
Yeah. Sorry, Joseph, please continue.
one more I watched, which I actually liked as much as The Lost Coast Tapes, or if not better, is called Skew. It's SKEW. Basically, this one is about three people who are driving across country to go to a wedding ceremony. And one of them buys this video camera in like this secondhand shop. And he's going to tape the wedding. But he decides, you know, to you know, tape his friend, you know, as they do through this. And so they start driving across country, and he starts noticing, I should mention that this isn't necessarily a found footage movie, more as you're watching the footage as it's being recorded. So, I mean, it's not actually found. But anyway, you know, he starts noticing that whenever they make like a stop somewhere, say like a convenience store, you know, if he's filming, he'll notice some people, like complete strangers, like in the camera, like their face becomes like distorted and skewed, you know, as the title. And these people start ending up dead. And then all these weird things start happening. And it's a really weird movie. It kind of reminds me of Session 9 and The Ring. It's like a mixture of that, but with the found footage, like aesthetic. It's kind of a slow buildup, but it uses a lot of sound and just kind of overall like creeping dread, just building up to a pretty good ending. It's a little vague, but you know, all these movies usually are, but this one I would definitely recommend because there's really no shaky camera. It's mainly just, you know, him filming his friends, and the people are likable in the movie, and it has some really, really, really effective jump scares, which I won't spoil here, but if you see that, and if you do like the whole found footage kind of shtick, this one is one I would recommend.
Okay, cool. I think I've seen the trailer for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Oh, well, thank you. Is that everything, Joseph?
Yeah, that's all I've pretty much had time. I mean, I went and bought a bunch of movies, but movies I've seen a million times, so I won't get into those.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Nathan, how about you? What have you been watching?
I watched the 1980s version of I Saw What You Did.
Okay, I've not seen that, but I'd quite like to.
It was pretty good, you know, for an 80s TV movie. I mean, obviously, you know, it's got its moments of being very slow. But I thought it was a really interesting. I think the idea is very interesting, you know, where these teenage girls are really bored. So they decide to start prank phone calling people. And they just happen to call a guy who's just murdered his girlfriend. Mm. And they pull the whole, I saw what you did and I know who you are. So, of course, now he goes after them. Which, you know, I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, you know, it's got a few, you know, scenes that are kind of tense in it. But, you know, I thought it was mainly good for kind of a nostalgia feel. I mean, it's not exactly scary, but I still really enjoyed it.
Have you seen the Joan Crawford one from the 60s? Was it 50s, 60s, 60s?
I haven't seen it, but I really want to.
Cool. Okay. What else have you been watching?
I also watched Hotline, Linda, you know, starring Linda. Wonder Woman. I liked it a pretty good bit, although I thought that the identity of the killer was very, very obvious. But, I mean, it didn't stop me from enjoying the movie. And the finale, where she finds herself, like, stalked around the bar... I thought it was straight out of a slasher movie, you know, like with him like kicking the doors open to get to her and, you know, her screaming and, you know, I mean,
he's you know, it was a good little chase scene. Isn't he carrying a harpoon, isn't he? I seem to remember.
Actually, she has a harpoon at the end.
I knew there's a harpoon involved.
I guess that was her defense at the bar, was a harpoon instead of a gun. I can imagine a bar fight going on and her pulling out a harpoon.
Well, I suppose it's quite an effective way of deterrent, isn't it? But, I seem to remember it being quite... Because I reviewed it on Hysteria Lives, and it, for a lot of it, it really kicks into slasher movie gear in the last sort of quarter of an hour, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Where did you find Hotline?
From you.
From me? Really?
Yes.
That must have been a long time ago.
Yeah, it was.
I like the way it's starring Wonder Woman, not Linda Carter, actually starring Wonder Woman.
Yeah, she's actually, she doesn't display Wonder Woman skills.
She doesn't have a gold lariat in the movie?
Does it make a funny springy sound when she jumps?
I'm afraid not.
No, I have seen Hotline, actually. I did quite like it, as far as I know, but that's because I'm a big Wonder Woman fan.
All right. Well, thank you, Nathan. Is there anything else you want to let us know about?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, well, thank you. How about you, Eric? What have you been
watching? Well, I saw Bad Dreams, which is the 1988 movie starring Jennifer Rubin, which was, I think, touted as kind of a Nightmare on Elm Street ripoff. Mm. But watching it again for the first time in 24 years, I failed to see why it was compared. Because certainly the sort of the ending doesn't really set it up as kind of a franchisey nightmare stalker film like Nightmare on Elm Street is. As I recall, seeing it for the first time in 1988, I wasn't too impressed with it. This time around, my opinion didn't change a huge amount. I mean, I think it's okay. It's Jennifer Rubin is this ex-member of a cult who wakes up after being in a coma for 13 years, and she has visions of this deceased cult member who, you know, haunts her in her dreams. And then all these people in the hospital start dying around her in what are apparent suicides. And it has, as I said, it has this kind of twist towards the end, which makes it less of a Freddy film and more of a, I don't know how to describe it, but certainly I can kind of see a very vague connection to the Elm Street films.
Maybe it's the name. Yeah. Do you reckon it's the name they gave the film, wasn't it? It's got, I suppose,
yeah,
kind of damned it by giving it that name, didn't they?
Because, and also pilfering Jennifer Rubin, who was in Dream Warriors as well. Mm-hmm. So that probably helped them sell the film. The other one I saw was much more fun, Mystics in Bali. Which is the deliriously strange and cheesy Indonesian fantasy horror film from 1981. And, you know, I don't even know where to begin to describe its strangeness, but at the heart of the film is this woman, this female, she's a journalist or an author, and she's looking to do some research into black magic. So she enlists the help of this witch, the witch has sort of nefarious plans to use the journalist, you know, for her, you know, own means, which involves her head parting from the rest of her body, with all her innards hanging from her neck stump, and the head then flies around with vampire fangs and bites people and kills them, and it's incredibly bizarre. Then there's a scene where people turn into pigs, and there's, it all ends in a big warlocky witchy fight where lightning bolts are coming out of people's hands. And I mean, I can't even describe how deliriously silly it is. I mean, if you've seen things like Lady Terminator, or what was the other one I'm trying to think of, The Queen of Black Magic, it's this on the same lines. Great fun, really, really unlike anything you'll have ever seen in your life. I just thought it was wonderful. I don't know if any of you guys seen it.
I've seen it. Yeah. Is that the one where the severed head flies through the window and starts lapping at the woman's menstrual blood?
Yes, because it has... there's something to do with newborn baby, because the woman is pregnant, isn't she, or something? Yeah. Yeah, it is incredibly weird. But it's available on YouTube to watch in its entirety if anyone out there wants to check it out.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a watch, isn't it?
Definitely.
I remember showing it to some friends quite a number of years ago now, and everyone sort of sat there, kind of slack-jawed, watching it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And finally, the one because as you were saying, we were doing the commentary track for Savage Weekend yesterday. I watched Paul Kenner, the director's previous film, which was Wendigo. And it's a story about sort of this Indian curse on an island. The sort of the creature or the ghostly figure on the island makes the people explode, which is bizarre. I mean, it's a... technically, and in terms of acting, it's a better film than Savage Water. If it's as much fun, I'm not sure. After watching it yesterday with you guys, I had a lot of fun, actually, with the rewatching Savage Water. But Wendigo has a character in it called Eric, and there's a line of dialogue in it that made me reach for the phone for my lawyers. If you have it there, Justin, if you could play. This is what they say about me tarnishing my good name.
I'm beginning to suspect that Eric is some kind of a lingerie freak.
And I just want to clarify to everyone, I'm not a lingerie freak.
Are you saying that sort of sat there in silk panties and bra set?
Do you have a webcam in here? How did you know?
Well,
I mean, obviously I'm not. No.
No. Okay. Right. Well,
I'm in a pair of jeans.
Well, the webcam's just taken a few photos of you, which are now up on the Hysteria Continues Facebook site. So if you want to head over there to have a look. But was it? It was better than Savage Water in there?
I think certainly the acting was better. Now it has a much smaller cast. There's only 5-6 people in it.
Okay.
And certainly it has a stronger plot, because there is a sort of a twist near the end where there's this buried treasure. I mean, the setup of the plot is these people want to go and photograph an ox or a deer or something on this island. It's really stupid, but then it turns out there's hidden treasures on the island. But then this Wendigo, I keep saying Wendigo, I don't know why, this Wendigo, which is an Indian spirit, is trying to scare them away by making them explode, which would scare anyone away.
It would indeed, yes. Well, thank you, Eric. Is there anything else you want to...
Well, just apart from Bloody Weekend, no. Our bloody... Ugh, I can't get anything right today. Bloody Homecoming.
Oh, gosh. Poor Eric.
I know. You've got me all...
Oh, flustered.
Flustered now after your diatribe about Toya.
Oh, poor Toya. Anyway, thank you, Eric. I'll just quickly run through what I've been watching. I watched, actually, the other night, and it's not really a slasher movie, but I do enjoy it. I think it's a really funny film. It's Drop Dead Gorgeous, with Kirstie Alley and Denise Richards.
There's some irony right there.
Why is it an irony?
Drop Dead Gorgeous starring Kirstie Alley.
Well, no, she was younger then. But if you've not seen it, it's a story, kind of like a faux documentary about a beauty pageant in small town Americana, and where the girls start dying one by one. And although it's not really a slasher movie, it's quite twisted and quite funny. I'm kind of guessing you guys have seen it, haven't you?
Yes.
A mare, I can.
It's got the great scene where Denise Richards does her kind of dance with Jesus, doesn't she, on the cross? There's only one man for me, and it's her talent section where she dances with Jesus on the cross. Have you seen it, Eric?
I saw it about, when was it out, 99? I saw it then, and I can't remember anything about it, although I do remember not being too pushed. There was another cheerleader-y one out around the same time, wasn't there?
Was it Bring It On?
Yeah. Oh, actually, no, sorry, I did like Drop Dead Gorgeous. It was Bring It On I didn't like. Okay, yeah, but I can't remember anything about it. I mean, that Jesus scene you just mentioned, I have no recollection at all. It sounds more John Waters than anything else.
It was a little, well, it's kind of John Waters-esque, but it's not really a slasher movie. But anyway, so I'll just skirt over that one. But that was...
not that... really a slasher movie. It's not a slasher movie.
Well, there's a few people die, Eric. So, but we won't go there, will we? We won't go there. But what is more of a slasher movie is Killer's Moon, which is the 1978 British movie about... three escapee mental patients on LSD or some kind of mind-altering drug who come across, not literally, but a bus full of schoolgirls who are trapped in a hotel and rape. Well, they do, as we kind of literally come across them, because I mean, when they're schoolgirls, they're all about 35 years old, but and they rape and pillage and murder the schoolgirls. And it's a very... a bizarre film. It's quite entertaining. I mean, it's the kind of film that could only have been made in the 1970s. And this little bit of dialogue, you'll see why. This little bit of dialogue is two of the girls discussing what will happen if they survive.
Look, you were only raped. As long as you don't tell anyone about it, you'll be all right. You pretend it never happened. I pretend I never saw it. And if we ever get out of this alive, well, maybe we'll both live to be wives and mothers.
Yes, obviously a feminist kind of slasher movie, as you can hear. Have you guys seen it?
Yes, no.
A long time ago.
It's bizarre. It's kind of it's a kind of very British kind of quite sleazy kind of sort of low budget kind of slasher movie from 1978. So same year as Halloween. It's not really anything like Halloween, but there is certainly a sense of fun with this kind of these three escapee mental patients sort of dressed a bit like the people from Clockwork Orange chasing these overage schoolgirls around this hotel. Throughout the night, so it's one that I'd quite like to pick for the podcast at some point, because I think we'd have some fun with it. But that was that one. The other film I've watched again, which is even less of a slasher movie perhaps than Drop Dead Gorgeous, is one that was brought up on the forums, and I saw it many, many, many years ago, and I didn't remember much about it. But Body Boy brought it up on the forums. It was Murder Elite. It's another British film from 1985. And I'm going to put a review of it up on Hysteria Libs at some point. But it starts off like an incredibly, you know, well, like exactly like a slasher movie, with a woman being chased through darkened woods by a killer in black leather, with a, and it keeps holding the knife up, gleaming blade, and lots of point of view and her falling over and all that kind of stuff. And it's very much like a slasher movie. And then it kind of cuts to a very, very boring story with Billy Whitelaw, who was probably more famous as the nanny in The Omen, the original Omen, and Ali McGraw as two kind of dueling sisters, and with these, the murders going on, but only one murder happens at the beginning of the film, and then the rest of the film is them just bickering, really. And then it becomes a bit of a, you know, it kind of, it seeks into a not very interesting thriller towards the end. But the opening 5 minutes are pure slash movie, and unfortunately the rest of it isn't. And it's a film that completely vanished into obscurity. I think it was made in 85, but didn't even get a release on video in the UK until 97. Have you had a chance to watch it yet, Joseph? Because you mentioned about possibly putting it up.
No, I do have a copy, but your review that I read kind of made me take a swerve, so it may be a while.
Yeah. It's not a great recommend for me by any stretch. It is one of those films where you kind of like, it's kind of film you think it's, you could sort of start fantasizing about rearranging the kitchen drawer or something.
Or you'd rather go, you know, watch a Susie concert or something.
Well, that would obviously be preferable to most things, but yes,
it's like a last resort type of thing.
Yes, I see where you're going there with Joseph, and we.
I just defended Eric's honor from earlier.
Yay!
I just see Eric. You're kind of stammering through the whole show. I'm just trying to get you back on your game.
Thank
poor,
you,
poor Eric.
I know.
But anyway, well, let's move.
I'll see it eventually, but
yeah,
I'm not in a hurry.
I can guess, Nathan. You've not seen it, have you?
Murder Elite.
Hmm.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Oh, you have seen it? What, recently?
Yeah, I mean, it's been, like, a long time ago. I remember the reason I watched it to begin with was because I love the artwork. Mm. And, you know, when I was a young kid, you know, I see this artwork and I'm like, oh, well, this movie looks incredible. You know, like, I have to see it. And then I watch it and realize it's not. And are we thinking of the same movie here, or am I thinking of something different?
When did
this movie come out?
It came out in
86.
Yeah.
Or am I wrong?
Well, no, it's made in 85. Okay. It's the artwork's got the one. It's got the woman with the. There's a house in the background, and she's kind of looking around a tree.
That's it.
Yeah, it's on it. Yeah. Yes. Ali McGraw.
It's the two sisters, right? Like the dark haired sister and.
That's right.
The blonde sister.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, when I was younger, like, and of course, I see the artwork and it looks like a full-on slasher movie, and I rent it, and then I find out it's more like a melodrama. I think there's a scene in it where one of the sisters, like, this is probably my favorite scene in the movie, where she just starts slapping her other sister around.
Well, she does that after telling her she's had an abortion.
Yes, she's like, "You killed his grandchild." Yeah. He's talking about their father.
Slap. And it's kind of like, so it's the least understanding kind of response to someone being told they've had an abortion is to be slapped by their sister. But it's not, the subject matter's not funny, but Ali McGraw gives such the worst performance possibly of anyone outside of Savage Water.
Worse than Mahmood.
Don't you say that about Mahmood.
Pretty much. I mean, she
Did
is
you ever
pretty,
say that about Mahmood?
Pretty bad. I think she... apparently she had quite well-documented problems with alcohol and stuff, and it kind of... It looks perhaps she was in a drying-out period. I don't know if Ali McGraw's lawyers are listening. I'm sure she wasn't. But she just looks... She basically is very, very flat and looks very drawn and worn out and is pretty much just speaking her lines as if she's reading a telephone directory. But anyway, enough on Murder Elite, because I'm presuming you've not seen it, Eric, have you?
No.
And I wouldn't recommend it. But
I'd never even heard of it.
Well, yes. Well, count yourself lucky. But one film will we recommend? Well, let's find out after we listen to the trailer for Bloody Homecoming.
Wonderful. We're all finally having ourselves a real homecoming around here again.
It's our last homecoming.
And new beginnings.
Cheers.
I give you your queen. serial killer.
If there's a spill, I'll page you. Otherwise, stay out of sight.
Scary movies in my place?
Well, that was the trailer for the upcoming movie, Bloody Homecoming. Does anyone want to give a synopsis? Who would like to do that? Put you on the spot. Who's going to step forward?
Don't everybody speak at once.
Okay, yeah. I'll try. It starts off in grand slasher tradition with sort of 3 years ago prologue where... it's not quite a prank goes wrong, but a boy gets locked into a cupboard in the school, a fire starts and he's burned to death. It cuts to 3 years later and all of the students involved are now seniors and they're going for their very last homecoming dance. But somebody sort of is knocking them off one by one. And I suppose that's really the essence of the plot, is it, Justin?
Pretty much, yes. Mm. I mean, in time-honoured tradition... of kind of the kind of slasher movie, and of course, as I said before, this was written by Jake Helgren, who's a friend of the show and somebody I've known for many years, and we know he now lives in LA and makes his living writing films. He's I think Bloody Homecoming. I interviewed him about this. If you go back on iTunes, you'll find a show. I can't remember which show it was, and so this is the first of his produced scripts, and he has another one coming out called Varsity Blood in 2013, I think, which is being prepped. It's in pre-production at the moment, which I believe Jake's directing himself. So I'll start off by saying that I really enjoyed Bloody Homecoming, and obviously that's not tempered, but obviously bearing in mind, obviously, we are friends with Jake. But having said that, I think I mentioned to him that I was a bit worried, obviously, watching it, because what if I thought it was awful? And I didn't think it was awful. He was very kindly let us watch the movie. It's not out yet, but it should be out. Well, hopefully it'll be picked up from distribution and will be out early next year. But it's a lot of fun. The positives for me for the film is that Jake knows what makes a good slasher movie. In so much that he's a fan of them, and again, sometimes, as with Rob Zombie, fans of horror movies don't always make the best horror movies. But Jake kind of knows that, you know, likable characters makes a good slasher movie, which unfortunately 80% of filmmakers in the last 5 years seem to have not understood that. But Bloody Homecoming has got lots of, you know, engaging, fun, you know, relatable characters, and that really makes it in my mind. I mean, it has its shortcomings, and we can talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But what about you guys, Nathan? What did you think of the film?
Oh, of course, I loved it. I mean, it's set at a high school, and it's got a huge body count, and you know, and it's I really like the bitchy cheerleader girl, Cheryl. And her, like, sidekick, who's kind of an airhead, Darcy. I mean, it reminded me of Selena and Darcy from Movie House Massacre. You know, I mean, it really did. And I thought, oh, you know, it's very brought back good memories of, you know, movies like that. And I like that he, you know, Jake, you know, for the most part, I think he fleshed the characters out pretty well. I mean, all the characters seem to have a moment, you know, where, you know, you learn more about them. You know, before, you know, they probably will end up beating their, you know, deaths. You know, and the death scenes, you know, they were pretty good. I particularly liked the scene in the parking lot. Mm. With the one girl's getting chased in the parking lot. And, you know, she ends up hiding under a vehicle. You know, that was a pretty good scene. And, you know, I guess my only critique is that I thought the killer, I mean, I did guess who it was fairly early on, but That being said, I did not guess the motive. I had the motive all wrong. So, you know, I give this one a high recommendation. But, you know, I mean, I love every movie, of course.
Of course. Well, yes, a bit. I think it's a kind of, I think it's a recommend, well, probably from all of us. And obviously we're going to keep it spoiler free because very few people have had the chance to watch the movie. But Joseph, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I like Bloody Homecoming a bit. I had a couple problems with it, though. My problem is that I liked the characters for the most part, but I had a hard time kind of distinguishing a few of them from one another. Like, I think it was mostly a couple of the girls. They really looked alike, and I was like, is that this girl or is that girl? But that's just a small complaint. And I kind of had a problem with some of the death scenes and some of the chase scenes. I thought and this is no knock on Jake, and this is probably more of a director's or editor's problem. But I thought they were kind of stagey. I mean, they needed a little more speed to them, I guess you'd say. But I mean, other than that, I thought the film was really, really quite well done. I liked. There's a couple of characters in particular that I really didn't want to see die. And so when they did die, I was like, oh, I was kind of hoping they'd make it. It would have been kind of interesting if they were the final couple, as it were. But I guess the killer, the very second they introduced the character. And what else? The one scene I do like is when I'm trying not to spoil it here, but there's a gay character. And he has a run-in with a killer. I'm not going to say what happens, but some of his dialogue I got a good kick out of. But, you know, overall, I think Jake is definitely a person who he knows what tricks you have to pull, what that's not a pun, by the way. he knows what you have to do to make a slasher film work. He knows what rules you have to follow and what rules you have to break. And, you know, like you said, he makes the characters likable, and that's the most important thing, because a lot of these movies that are coming out today, Rob Zombie's Halloween, for example, they have, the worst characters you've, ever met, and you want them to die. So whereas in this film, you're kind of rooting for everyone to kind of make it. So, overall, pretty good movie. I liked it a lot.
Excellent. Okay. No, thank you, Joseph. And Eric, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I liked it too. What I like is that it's just unashamedly a bona fide slasher movie, and it's not pretending to be anything else. I love the fact that you have the past tragedy, the notes put in the locker, the killer in a disguise that's reminiscent of the early 80s. In this instance, I suppose it's not a spoiler because it happens quite early. The disguise is a fireman's outfit, which, harks back to My Bloody Valentine, The Prowler, all those ones. Again, the likable characters. I was particularly impressed with the fact that the homecoming queen, who would normally be the bitchy character, is one of the nice girls. And the relationship she has with her gay best friend reminds me a lot of Radish and Courtney in Final Exam. Mm. So I thought that, and they're characters you can root for, and that helps build the suspense. And I love that parking lot scene that Nathan was talking about as well, where I suppose she's kind of a gothy girl. She's not quite goth, but she's kind of the girl who wears lots of eyeliner and smokes fags and things like that. And there's lots of inventive death scenes as well. And there's a great one in a gym. I'm not going to spoil these, don't worry. There's a great one in a gymnasium as well. I'm trying not to spoil here, so I won't say any more. But he goes the traditional early 80s slasher route of having different methods of killing people. It's not just all, like when we got into Scream, I'll have a few words to say about, inventive deaths and the possible absence of them. And I also, there's a scene in it where I assume due to rights issues, somebody sends a text message on a U phone. Did anyone notice that?
I was thinking that.
Yeah.
Which I thought was good fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if you can't get the rights for something, you might as well sort of make a little joke about it, which I thought was quite clever.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, one of the things that I really liked about the film was I really surprised me who lived and who died. It's, quite often with a slasher movie, because obviously the formula is so set in stone, and that's part of the joy of them in some ways. But with this, characters you didn't expect to die did, and some of the ones you I didn't. Certainly didn't pick out who would be left surviving. But I also, for me, the killer was the revelation, the killer was a complete surprise. So I obviously I'm not as good as fingering the killer as Nathan and Joseph are.
Well, I am pretty good at it.
That's my problem. It's very rare for a whodunit to kind of throw me off guard. So, I mean, I'm always like, yeah, it's this person, and I was right here. But a couple things I wanted to mention I forgot. I did like the weapon where the killer steals the homecoming baton, and he sharpens it into a weapon. And I did like that, but, you know, I was kind of disappointed that the killer didn't use a fireman's axe because, you know, they wear a fireman's costume. But I also like you said, this movie is unashamedly a slasher movie through and through. I mean, there's no wink, nod. It's just a slasher movie, and I really did like the I don't know if you saw it this way, but the completely over the top acting from the person who turns out to be the killer and the revelation. I really did like that. It reminded me of a couple of movies from the 80s, which I won't name because that would really spoil it, but I think you know what two movies I'm talking about.
I can certainly think of one of them anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
What is Homecoming, by the way? We don't
it's
have
basically homecoming. Like a dance. I don't know what it means. I never went to dances high school.
I come home every day from work and I don't have a dance organized.
Why not? You're the dancer of the podcast, aren't you?
I am the homecoming queen, though.
Yeah.
Especially,
I guess it means you're just coming home, and I don't know.
Well, Eric, I can imagine you're. I keep on now picturing you wearing a tiara with your setting off your silk bra and panties combo.
Well, speaking of tiara, there's a death by tiara that looks pretty brutal in this movie.
Yes, indeed. Well, hopefully that's whetted your appetite for Bloody Homecoming, and obviously.
Oh, and I have to say, I'm sorry, Justin, but yeah. I meant to say this to Eric. Are you implying that Radish was gay?
No, of course not. He's as straight as they come.
All right, I'm just making sure.
He was in love with Courtney.
He was.
Yes, yeah. He was in love with Courtney.
Yeah, everybody needs a good horse.
That's awful. You just worry about this horse face stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Well, they need to stop casting all these equines.
Oh, Joseph. Joseph.
Well, there's a reason that you wouldn't be cast in any movie anytime soon.
No, there's not. There's no reason whatsoever. Mm. I am an Adonis, and you know it.
Adonis.
Yeah, moving on.
Moving on. Well, when we get more news about Bloody Homecoming and when it's coming out and how you'll get to see it, we'll let you know. But
I hope he does get a distribution for it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And thank you very much, Jake, for letting us see it and let us know how things progress with Varsity Blood. And,
yeah, sorry, can I just, before you go any further, 29.5 is the episode number for the Jake interview back in February of this year.
Okay.
It's a mini-sode, yeah.
Yes.
Well, hopefully...
It's a 90-minute mini-sode.
Yes, very, which is kind of par for the course with us, isn't it? I look at other podcasts and they're about an hour or 50 minutes and we tip the scales at 3 hours. But moving on, so I hope, Jake, you enjoyed your plugging. And we will.
Oh, for Justin, sake. You're so rude.
I can't say anything without you taking it out of context.
You've seen too many of those Kenneth
dry British,
movies.
This dry British wit and charm. Just everything is a innuendo now.
I know. Well, I'm never going to be able to get over it, am I? You know, every time I
You've
say
also
anything.
You've seen a lot of Are You Being Served with Mrs. Slocum.
Oh, but of course, yes, yes. That was my childhood.
Have you ever seen Mind Your Knickers?
Pardon?
Mind Your Knickers, like your pantaloons or whatever it is, or your underwear.
Pantaloons? I keep on, and now I'm picturing
It's a
Eric.
British show called Mind Your Knickers.
Is it?
I don't know. I was a joke.
You're making that up.
Yes.
It was actually, I saw that on some TV show where they were making fun of British humor, and I can't remember what it was.
It sounds like something that it would say about Mrs. Slocum.
Yeah. So,
but, okay, well, let's, at the risk of this turning into a four-hour show, let's move on to our top three. And the top three is, obviously, we're covering Scream as a feature presentation a little bit later. But we're going to talk about our top three favourite scenes from post-Scream slashers. So, number three, who wants to go first? How about you, Eric?
Okay, my number three is from Halloween H2O, which is one of my favorite post-Scream slashers. It's where Jamie Lee Curtis comes face to face with the Shape, which was a moment I had been longing for since seeing Halloween 2, which was my first slasher movie back in 1985. So it was a long time coming, but I really, really loved, I certainly loved at the time, H2O. I haven't watched it in quite a while now. I'm wondering if it still would have the same power. But I mean, I think I've said before on the podcast, I went to see that twice on its opening night here in Ireland. You know, I went out to one screening and into another. But I paid for both, in case anyone's wondering. Just the iconic scene where Jamie Lee Curtis is looking through the round window in the door and she comes face to face with the Shape, you know, thinking like she's been 20 years since, you know, the events of Halloween 1 and 2. I thought that the film works quite well, to be honest. I could have done maybe without Josh Harnett and his stupid hair. But on the whole, I thought the film was a success. And one of my main reasons for loving it so much was the reteaming of Jamie Lee Curtis with Michael Myers, which was what was missing from 4, 5 and 6, and obviously 3.
I watched it the other night, actually. It's a film I forgot to mention.
How did it hold up for you?
Yeah, pretty well. It's. I think the thing that kind of niggles with me a little bit was the Michael Myers mask in it.
Yes.
Is kind of blindingly white, and it doesn't... I mean, to be fair to Michael Myers, obviously, he's had to have spent 20 years looking for that mask, hasn't he? Because it obviously got melted onto his face at the end of the second film. So he had to find another one. So luckily he did find another one. But it didn't, you know, it always surprised me with the Halloween films that they, in Halloween 2, did such a good job at recreating the mask. But the others, I think we said, haven't we, before, like the in Halloween 5, the mask looks like it's half William Shatner, half Mr. Burns from The Simpsons.
Or half Barry Manilow.
Yes. But it
that reminds me, not to jump ahead here, but the whole Michael Myers mask thing, I have a comparison with Scream doing something like that. I'll talk about later, but I'm glad you brought that up because I almost forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
But in H2O, they use a couple of different masks. And at one stage, the Shape looks kind of oriental, the mask. Mm. It's just bizarre. And as you said, I mean, I don't know why they don't just recreate the mask, you know, as a facsimile. What's the big difficulty? I think in Halloween 2, actually, on the new Scream Factory release, they mentioned that it's the same mask from part one. It's just the fact that it had been festering underneath Deborah Hill's bed that it looks kind of different, but still kind of the same, if you follow me.
It kind of looks brand new to me. It looked like it had just been sprayed white that afternoon or something. But anyway... But yeah, that scene still has a resonance. I think it's kind of it works really well. I still can't really work out how Jamie Lee Curtis didn't realise that she, in her contract that she was up for she'd have to make an appearance in the next film.
Well, have you seen the? Cause she was at the Horror Hound convention since we last recorded, and there's a 1-hour Q&A with her on YouTube.
Okay,
talks about that, and apparently the ending of H2O, everyone knew what was going to happen in the next in Halloween Resurrection.
Mm.
So,
they did, including her.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. So she.
But they left it ambiguous, just in case maybe Resurrection was never made. But they already had the plotline of how to undo the ending of H2O if necessary. So
interesting, because I got the impression that she was kind of tricked into it. Into appearing in Resurrection.
No, she doesn't come across as saying that now. And the other thing about that 1-hour interview is that it's basically all Halloween related. I mean, there's very little Prom Night, Terror Train, The Fog, questions asked. It's all Halloween, which is a shame because we sort of know all the stories about Halloween inside out. And she recalls some of the ones that we've heard in the commentaries and on the various extras.
Right. But I'm just upset that this is her first and last convention appearance.
Because she's amazing in it. I mean, literally, the clip on YouTube is an hour long, and there's probably 5 or 6 questions. It's just that she's such a great speaker, and she's such great fun, and it's just a shame that she won't be doing any more.
Why did she say that she'd only do one? Is it just because it was a charity, wasn't it?
It was for charity, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's a children's hospital, I think, she helped set up or something like that, yeah.
Okay, okay. And obviously, just on as a side note, is obviously Scream Factory are carrying on with their fantastic releases, and they've got The Burning up for Blu-ray release next year as well, which should be fantastic, hopefully.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And The Fog as well.
And The Fog, yeah, because the it's on Blu-ray in the UK and probably in Ireland as well, but it's really bad.
Bare bones, yeah,
and it's also really I don't know what do you call it, you know, that banding you get on kind of cheap DVDs where especially something like The Fog, and it's quite difficult to replicate that on digital media, isn't it? But it's got really, really bad banding issues on the UK DVD. They've done a really bad job on it, so good choice, Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on, Joseph, do you want to give us your number three?
Yes, my number three is the water slide scene from the pool. It's the Prague or Germany. It's one of those movies that has like a little bit of people from a little bit of everywhere. But it's basically these kids break into this indoor swimming facility to party because they've all graduated high school or college or whatever it is. And basically, there's a scene where this couple they get on this huge indoor water slide, and you know, the camera follows them, you know, they're having fun, but the killer sticks a machete through the very bottom of the tube, the water tube. And so, you know, it basically splits the victim in half as they're going down the water slide, and they can't really avoid it. And I always thought that was a really good death scene, so that's why I picked it.
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. Very good death scene, isn't it? In a we discussed the pool at quite some length a while back, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I had it on Recently Seen as well, because the first time I saw it was a few weeks ago, yeah. Mm-hmm. Great scene.
Well, what about you, Nathan? What are your thoughts on that death scene?
Oh, I love that death scene. Yeah. My only complaint, really, is I bought the DVD for the pool to watch it, and when the menu pops up, like, it shows that scene, and I'm like, it kind of ruined it for the movie, because that would have been awesome to have no expectation of that scene, and then it just happened.
See, that's what I was going to say about Eric's pick with Jamie coming face to face with Michael Myers, because when that movie first came out, the picture of her looking at Michael Myers through that door hole, it was one of the, you know, kind of the what do they call those, like, publicity stills they send out to promote the movie? That was one of the pictures they sent out, and that kind of ruins that big moment for me, because I knew exactly how it was going to happen.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Nathan, what's your number three?
My number three comes from Cherry Falls, and it's the chase scene with Brittany Murphy and the killer in the school. And I've always loved this chase scene. You know, I love, you know, that, you know, she's running down the hallway and the killer is just like probably no more than like 2 or 3 feet behind her chasing her. And I just think the chase scene's shot really well. And it kind of amps up the tension, you know, and I just can't imagine having a killer that close behind you running after you down the hall. And then I love the scene where, you know, the killer's trying to stab her and she's trying to flip the killer over her shoulder. Mm. And the killer, you know, instead just like knees her in the back and like knocks her head into the lockers. It's like, you know, it was a really good try, but, you know, it didn't quite work out. And then, of course, the really funny way that she, you know, finally knocks the killer out using the big shark in the classroom.
Yeah.
But I mean, I love it. Cause I love when she climbs up on the counters and she's throwing everything she can get her hands on at the killer. I mean, that's a good chase scene in my opinion. And I'm a big fan of chase scenes anyway. And I love Brittany Murphy. I thought she was excellent in that movie.
Yeah. It's a shame she's no longer with us, isn't it?
Yeah. It's sad.
Was the killer, am I remembering correctly, the killer was wearing high heels?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The killer was, wearing pretty big heels, actually.
Because if you're a killer, you're obviously, you know, a bit mental anyway, or very mental. But I can imagine, you know, you would want to get a nice kind of comfy pair of running shoes, wouldn't you, rather than clip-clop after someone down a...
Some Nikes or something.
Probably wasn't the best idea for...
I have this image now of Jason Voorhees in a pair of Jimmy Choos.
Well, wasn't there that advert for Running Shoes or something, wasn't it? With that did a parody of Friday 13th and the woman runs.
Slasher movies, yes. Someone chasing him through the woods. Yeah.
Yeah. And wasn't that a shoe thing that they'd got on Nike running shoes or something? And so
it was the Nike, because the killer, when the girl outruns the murderer, he just has this kind of dumbfounded look, like, "Oh, how did that just happen?"
Yeah.
And so, didn't some like family groups or something get up in arms over that ad?
Yes, I think so. Which is no huge surprise.
Yes.
But well, thank you, Nathan. Is there anything else you wanted to say about that?
If you haven't had it, you've had it.
Indeed, yes. Right, well, my number three is the backseat scene in Urban Legends, which, we'll talk a bit more about this, I think, when we come to Scream, but I think there's been some talk on the forums about, whether or not we are now look more fondly at these films, because at the time they came out, our post-Scream films, it was the term trendy horror was coined, and many horror fans or slasher movie fans were very kind of like, dismissive of these films. And obviously some of them are better than others, and I've always adored Urban Legend because I think it's one of the cheesiest of the post-Scream slashers. But also I think it's got some very effective scares in it, and the scene at the beginning where the woman is in goes to a gas station, and she's got Brad Dourif is the kind of creepy guy there, and the misdirection of thinking that he's the killer or he's the person who's going to be a threat to her, but in fact he's trying to help her because he's seen someone in the back seat of her car. And the only kind of bum note I kind of guess of that scene is, well, there's the fantastic bit that they're playing the Bonnie Tyler.
Now you're getting as bad as me. Yeah.
Bonnie Tyler.
Yeah, Bonnie Tyler.
Bonnie Langford is a completely different person, believe me.
It is, yes. Mm. The turnaround, bright eyes, or what was it? Total Eclipse of the Heart. Yeah, and it was just you could tell the sense of fun with that movie to include that. The only kind of bum note really is that when the woman's decapitated, it's kind of this bizarre image of the axe coming through the windscreen, but it's the car's obviously not moving. It's kind of it just ends on a bit of a bum note, but I just really like that scene. I thought it was very well put together. And so well put together, and I think I mentioned this before, and I have to rip this and put this on the YouTube channel, but the Bollywood slasher that recreated that scene shot for shot is quite funny. So I'll see if I can dig that out.
What song do they use?
I don't know. I haven't seen it for ages, but...
they use the same one, but they got Mahmood singing it.
But it's funny to see it because they just completely kind of rip it off. I mean, it's not irony, it is a complete rip off, but it's quite funny. So that's my number three. Is there any dissent?
How did the killer like swing that axe in a vehicle?
Mm. And not to mention, it's kind of silly. She's driving like 60 miles an hour and you're going to decapitate someone while they're driving 60 miles an hour. Mm. How did she not, how did the killer not end up dead?
And also, I can't imagine the killer's hair would have fit in the back of that car.
Yes, how did that hair fit? It's something about the bigger the hair, the crazier the person, maybe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So.
Yes, Justin, 1992.
Well, my hair's not as big now, is it?
No. But back then.
Back then
it was huge. Clear of you.
As they say, the higher the hair, the closer to God. So that was number three, but we all know what's coming next, don't we?
Yay!
Yes, it is.
He's a cat. Flush in the toilet, he's a cat. Flush in the toilet, he's a cat. Flush in the toilet, he's a cat. Flush in the toilet.
Eric, what's your big number two?
Okay, my big number two, quite aptly for probably some people, not for me, is the appearance of Tori Spelling in Scream 2. I have said before on the podcast, I'm a huge fan of Beverly Hills 90210, one of the cheesiest TV series you'll ever see. So in Scream 1, there's a throwaway line where Sydney sort of resigns herself to the fact that if they make a movie of her life story, they'll probably end up casting Tori Spelling as her. And that's exactly what happens in Scream 2 when when we're watching the film Stab, which is based on the events of the first movie. So Tori Spelling comes up, and she's playing opposite Luke Wilson as Billy, and the two of them are just playing it sort of kind of over the top and really melodramatically. And it's just, I think it's great fun. I think it was a really nice touch to, and it's quite sporting of Tori Spelling as well, seeing this, that she was kind of slagged off by that line in the first Scream, you know, to come on board and, you know, play Sid, the, you know, Sidney Prescott character in the fake film Stab. So yeah, that's my number two. Bravo, Tori.
Bravo, Tori. Yes, indeed. Although I imagine that Tori Spelling would turn up at the opening of an envelope, wouldn't she? If she was invited.
You see, I was expecting mean comments, you know, so I'm not surprised you said something like that. I just feel sorry for you if you don't like Tori Spelling, Justin.
Okay, well, that's not going to upset me too much, but I don't dislike her. I think she's, you know, she is what she is, but and I'll say no more. But no, but nice pick for your number two, and quite appropriate. So, any thoughts on that, Nathan and Joseph?
I liked it. I thought it was a very clever jab and a callback to the first film.
Mm-hmm. It would have been funny to see a whole Stab, you know, if they did the whole movie.
Yeah. You know,
that would have been
quite fun.
Yeah.
See, the one thing I wonder about, though, is that in that scene where Tori Spelling and Luke Wilson are, you know, kind of going through the whole thing, she's like, my mom's dead and she's never coming back. And she runs off, and then Luke Wilson slaps his forehead and goes, stupid. How did he know that Billy did that? No one saw Billy do that.
That is
Sydney,
true.
Sydney ran away when Billy did that, because Billy did that in the first film. He was stupid. Mm. So no one saw him do that.
CCTV.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, they were alone. They ran off to a section of the school where there was nobody.
No, there was CCTV.
Yeah, it could be it. It could be cameras in the hallway, maybe. Mm. And then the person watching the cameras probably said, yeah, he just slapped his forehead and said stupid. But then again,
Joseph, yesterday I'm just going to say to you, Joseph, we've spent the last week watching Death by Invitation and Savage Water over and over again, and your big complaint is that how do they know Billy slapped his head?
Yeah, and then again, when we're going back to that, not to spoil it yet, but considering who Billy is in Scream, why would he even say stupid? Why would he care enough?
Well, you should bring that up when we talk about Scream.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of been brought up now, so I have no choice. But anyway, moving on.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say that I had an awesome theater experience with Scream 2. And the scene when the people saw Tori Spelling playing Sydney, like everybody was laughing, because I'm guessing a lot of people remembered the line from part one. I also love the opening, you know, with, what's her name? The girl that's playing the Drew Barrymore character in Scream 2.
Heather. What's her name?
Is it Heather
Graham?
Heather Graham, that's right.
Okay, I love her line, you know, I don't even know you, and I dislike you already. It's just so corny.
Yeah, I've mentioned it before on the podcast. I had Scream 2 is probably my all-time favorite theater experience as well. It was a midnight showing, and people were actually dressed as Ghostface.
Mm. Yes, well, excellent. Well, thank you. That's very good. Good number two, Eric. So, Joseph.
That's my second good number two of the day.
Yeah.
It just kept going.
We won't dwell there. So, Joseph. Okay, Joseph, what's your big number two?
My big number two is from Urban Legends Final Cut. That's a movie I love probably more than anyone. I don't know why I love this movie so much, but I do. But my favorite, it's one of my favorite scenes in the film is the ending where the two killers from both films unite and they do the whole Alfred Hitchcock gag where basically one killer is being wheeled around in a wheelchair by the other killer, and they play the Alfred Hitchcock Presents music, because the whole movie is based on students vying for this Hitchcock award, and finally they play the music at the end, and it focuses on the wheel turning and the credits flashing, sort of kind of a Hitchcock homage, sort of. And I always thought that was kind of a clever way to end the film.
No, absolutely. It's quite a sort of witty way to do it, wasn't it?
And it's a good callback to the first movie as well. Mm. Bringing back the killer from the first film.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Any other thoughts, Eric and Nathan?
No, I do agree it's a good movie. I probably don't love it as much as Joseph does. No, I do like it, though.
I love it a lot, but I
didn't pick up on the Alfred Hitchcock music, though, because I've never seen an episode of that series.
Oh, Eric.
I know.
Oh, Eric.
Oh, no.
Eric.
I can give you endless Toya trivia if you want, though, instead.
No, that's fine.
No, that's all right.
That's my area of expertise.
That's okay.
There's only one thing you can say about her.
Fantastic.
Which panto is she in this year?
I don't know.
Okay. Did you just say she lives in the back of a pinto?
well, she might have done in the past. But you know, you know what panto is, don't you?
No.
You don't know what panto is. Do you know what panto is, Nathan?
I'm afraid I don't.
Well, panto is basically something that's put on. It's like a comedy play, I kind of guess, isn't it, Eric? It's kind
yeah.
of. Is it, do you have pantos in Ireland? Is that a tradition?
We do indeed.
Well?
And actually, last year the staff were all going to go to Jedward in Panto in Dublin, but I was out of the country the day they had planned. Otherwise, I would have gone.
Mm. We have panto loons.
if you can imagine something like it's audience participation, it's got like they have like Jack and the Beanstalk, or those, it's all kind of those kind of things, and they're very kind of arch, and they have a like Widow Twankey or something like that, a man dresses a woman as a, you know, and in this case it's Toya. What?
She's a woman dressed as a woman.
Oh, is she? Okay. But basically what they are, it's for, you know, actors and actresses and singers who've fallen on lean times.
You're so mean.
Lean times.
Anyway, let's just move on, shall we, before this ends. Yeah.
Before you make me cry. He's a cat. Flushing the toilet, he's a cat. Goth.
Flushing the toilet, he's a
cat. Nathan, let's bring it back on track.
Why do you guys have to ruin my cat flushing toilet song?
It wasn't me.
Play it again if you want.
No, that's okay. I will survive. My number two is from Wrong Turn, which I adore. I think it's a fantastic film. And it's the scene where the two couples are hiding in the cabin, and the three like crazy mountain men don't know that they're in there. And they're hacking up the bodies of their friends, you know, and like they can see it through the keyhole, and the other two are hiding under the bed, and like the blood is like pooling down around them. I thought that was like really intense and quite a, very suspenseful sequence.
Mm. Mm. No, it's
that's a good sequence,
isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Eric? We move away from Toya.
She played one of the hillbillies, by the way.
The signal was breaking up there a lot, I'm afraid, at this end. So I didn't hear a lot. No, it was.
Was it? Okay.
Hopefully it picked it up when
it was the scene in Wrong Turn where they're in the cabin and she's hiding underneath the bed or something, is it?
That's right.
Yeah, the two couples are hiding.
Yes. No, I did love Wrong Turn, I have to say. I haven't seen it in quite a while, but I remember it being quite good. And that scene is great. Doesn't somebody have barbed wire wrapped around their face or something? Or
yeah, the dead body that they're pulling in had barbed wire wrapped around it.
Mm. Yeah, it's quite grisly in places.
That's one of the few scenes in the last, 10 or so years in slasher films where I was actually biting my fingernails because it was so tense. Mm. That is an incredible movie. I love Wrong Turn.
Mm.
Have any of you seen the... Because I saw Wrong Turn 2 and 3 maybe, but I haven't seen 4 and 5. Are they, from what I hear, they're getting worse and worse?
Well,
for me, Wrong Turn 2, I loved it. Not as much as the first one, but I still loved it. 3, I thought it was okay, not great. Mm-hmm. 4, I really liked, but there is just a scene in it that I can't get past. Like, the characters do something that... it just tops the... It just raises the bar on stupidity in a horror movie.
Mm. Yes, I would agree.
Okay.
I saw 2 and 4. I didn't like 2... And I thought 4, like Nathan, it was good until that moment. And then I couldn't follow the film anymore. I was like, I didn't care.
Okay. Well,
but I think there, for me, there's, we'll get onto this later, there's an equal moment of stupidity in Scream, but we'll mention that later.
Ooh. Interesting. Right. Well, thank you, Nathan. And it's a little bit of a cat for me. Well, for me, my number two is probably the only foreign, possibly, film. No, I suppose The Pool was a foreign film as well, wasn't it? But is Haute Tension, or Switchblade Romance, or High Tension, the French slasher movie. And the scene in it is the scene where the main character ends up at another gas station and plays cat and mouse with the killer. And not all is as it seems. If you've seen the film, I won't spoil it for you. But she's, it's just a great kind of suspense. It's about 15-20 minutes of this thing goes on, and she's in there, and there's the cashier there as well, and she's hide, the killer turns up. I think she's, if I remember correctly, she was in the back of the van with her friend, and goes in to try and raise the alarm, but is kind of basically followed, or the killer suspects there's somebody there, and there's a great scene, and again echoing one of the scenes that happens in Scream in the toilet where she kind of hides from the killer. But I just thought it was really, really, really well done, and sort of in a, you know, it's one of my favourite movies from that decade. So what are your thoughts, guys?
I like High Tension. I think it's got a lot of tension in it.
Yes.
So, good title.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I like it. I don't love it.
Sorry, Joseph.
As I said, I like the movie, but I don't love it. I think the movie's great up until the ending, and then the ending just kind of soured me on the what I'd seen before. I mean, it's hard to rewatch that movie because you know how it's going to end, and if you hate the ending that much, then you're like, you just feel like almost like you're wasting your time.
Mm.
But at the same time, I liked most of the stuff leading up to the ending, so it's kind of half and half.
I really like the scene where she is trying, where she knows there's an intruder in the house, sort of earlier on in the film, and she's trying to make it look like her bedroom has been untouched, so she's making the bed, and she's. Mm. It reminds me of Torso, in that way. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, talk about yourselves just one second, because I can. There's a cat trying to get in. And we haven't had enough cats this episode, so I won't be one second. Karen recording.
Cat.
Meow.
Trying to get in.
He's a cat. Meow. Taking a dump on the floor. Meow. Taking a dump on the floor. Meow. Yeah.
Justin should really toilet train those cats of his.
Yeah. I have the same problem. I have a very naughty cat who will go right next to where they're supposed to use the bathroom and use the bathroom right outside of it. I think they do it just to spite me.
That's
how they do
like
it
cats.
When they're mad at you.
Yeah. Well, they don't like where their litter pan is, and they're like, if I'm going to use this, I'm going to play.
Do they ever jump out of sort of a darkened place when you, like, when you're creeping around at night, like in a horror
actually,
film?
Actually, one of them did once. I swear, I walked right into the kitchen, and the cat was on the counter, and it jumped down, and it startled me. So I immediately started looking around for...
Yeah, for Jason know,
psychotic,
to pick.
Psychotic murderers and Susie hiding in the closet.
Okay, I'm back.
I knew it.
Yeah, I heard every word, Joseph Henson. So let's move swiftly on to our number ones. So, Eric, what is your number one?
Okay, my number one comes from Urban Legend Singular. This is the first Urban Legend film. It's the scene in the swimming pool. It's super duper cheesy, which is why I love it. What you have is Alicia Witt, who plays, is it Natalie, is her character name? She's watching her friend swimming in a swimming pool, but she's up in a room looking down through a window, and she spots this figure coming into the swimming pool wearing a duffel coat resembling that of the killer. And she's there banging on the window, trying to get the swimmer's attention, saying, "Watch out, there's somebody coming to kill you, la 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 la." And then the person takes off their duffel coat, and it just turns out to be another girl in her swimming costume, and she dives into the pool. I thought it was one of the great all-time cheats, and I like to think that the filmmakers knew what they were doing. They knew they were making sort of a super silly, cheesy scene, and that's why I love it so much. And that's why I love Urban Legend. It's kind of Scooby-Doo mixed with early 80s slasher, and it just has no shame. It'll you know, do anything for a laugh or a thrill, and that's why it's so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's one of the scenes, actually, that was highlighted as one of the reasons why the post-screen slashers were so bad. But I think, especially with Urban Legend, people kind of missed the trick, didn't they? They forget that some of the better, like the films like Happy Birthday to Me and those kind of very cheesy slashers, that's part of the joy of them, wasn't it? That kind of ridiculous.
Oh, completely, yeah.
which I think, have to say the director, the commentary for the Urban Legend DVD, I seem to remember him getting a really good laugh rewatching that scene of the girl that you just mentioned, Eric. So I think, you know, I think you're right. I think he had a really good idea that, you know, he was kind of doing this tongue-in-cheek.
And I suppose one thing people say a lot about Urban Legend is when it gets to the end scene, it sort of implies that what we've watched for the previous 90 minutes is somebody telling a story, so it can get away with being silly and a bit illogical.
Oh, that's a good point. I never even thought about that.
Oh, yeah, I never thought of it like that.
Well, thank you, Eric. Yes.
It's a reach, but...
I'm going to watch it in a whole new way now.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Well, thank you, Eric. Joseph, what's your number one?
Well, my number one is a massive, massive spoiler for Scream 2. So if you haven't seen Scream 2, well, you probably shouldn't be listening to this episode or the podcast in general. But my number one is the completely over-the-top acting from Laurie Metcalf's character, who turns out to be the killer in Scream 2, or one of the killers in Scream 2. She is out for revenge against Sidney Prescott for murdering Billy Loomis, her son, in the previous film, Scream, which is another spoiler. But yeah, again, you're listening to this episode, you're going to be spoiled. But I love her character in Scream 2 as the killer. She does the whole Mrs. Voorhees kind of Urban Legend Brenda shtick really well. I mean, she's all wide-eyed and crazy. It's like, you killed my son, and I can't think of a better motive than that. And she's just chasing Sidney around, and she's screaming like, ah, ah. And I don't know, I get a really good kick out of it. Because the film, you know, up until that, it's kind of, you know, it takes itself a little too seriously, a little more than the first Scream, I think. And then they just kind of throw it all out the window, and she just goes all crazy, and I don't know. I've always loved that. It just reminded me so much of those old slasher films where they reveal the killer and they just go completely off their rocker. So that's why I picked it for my number one.
Good pick. Thank you. Thank you, Joseph. Any comments on that, guys?
Yeah, it's. I remember watching that for the first time and thinking, this is totally Mrs. Voorhees. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. What about you, Nathan?
I agree. I mean, and Laurie Metcalf is a very, very talented actress. So I could tell that just by being so over the top must have been like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, we're going to be talking a lot more about Scream shortly, becoming up with our feature presentation. Nathan, what's your number one?
My number one comes from I Know What You Did Last Summer. And it's basically the character of Helen, played by Sarah Michelle Gellar. Now, I have to say, I may be in the minority on this, but I kind of liked her character more than the main girl, played by Jennifer.
Oh, Hewitt, I agree.
Julie.
I agree.
I loved Sarah Michelle Gellar in I Know What You Did Last Summer. I thought that her character was flawed and just very, very three-dimensional. You know, she was just an awesome character, so I was kind of saddened to see her to go. But it's basically her chase scene, you know, and her gown right after winning, you know, the crown not winning it. She was at the ceremony for the next year, and she was the reigning queen. But yeah, her getting chased through the furniture store and everything, and even the final scene, which, you know, she almost makes it to the parade before the killer like jumps out and grabs her. I just think that's a really very, very well done scene, and probably one of my favorite chase scenes in, you know, postmodern slasher movies, I should say.
Yeah, that's a good pick. It's a good pick. Probably quite an underrated film.
I love that scene. So good. That's a movie that I like. I think I like the sequel a little more because it's a more unabashed, you know, throwback to slasher films, whereas the first one kind of took itself a little more seriously. But I love that scene. I think it's one of the greatest chase scenes of
of any slasher film in the past 20 or so years. I mean, it's just so well done. And it's so sad that she gets, you know, bumped off, because she's such a much more interesting character than Jennifer Love Hewitt's character.
I still like Jennifer Love's
character. I like her, but,
yeah, no, I do agree. I mean, I love, I know she did last summer. I think I got a 4-star review on Hysteria Lives.
I like her bitchy sister too, played by Bridget Wilson.
I think, yeah, it has interesting characters and also has that real sense of fun of, you know, the early 80s slasher as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's only one dislikable character, and that's Ryan Felipe's one. So, I mean, I don't mind that there's one of those obnoxious characters.
Usually they do have one. I mean, one is good. When everyone's obnoxious, that's when you have a problem.
Yeah. Mm. But he was meant to be obnoxious, wasn't he? That was his character. Mm. But
I just thought it was a nice touch the way they have, you know, all the other characters sort of feel some degree of remorse. You know, it makes them more, as Nathan said, more three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no, well, thank you. Thank you for that. And probably seeking on quite neatly to my number one is, and it probably comes as no surprise to anyone who's listened to the podcast, it is the karaoke scene in I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Just for the song, is it?
I Will Survive, yes, for playing I Will Survive, and the genius of having the kind of I Still Know coming up on the karaoke machine. I just think it was kind of, you know, again, it was made by someone whose tongue was firmly in their cheek. And, you know, I maintain that I Still Know What You Did Last Summer is, you know, is as good as any of the best cheesy slashers from the early 1980s. It captures everything that is right with those, the things that we enjoy. And I just think it was kind of cheesy kind of a genius for that scene. You know, and so I won't say any more about it because I've already talked about it a number of times. But I think that film is unfairly hated by so many people. There's so many people who don't like it, and I just kind of, my message would be to watch it again with an open mind and try and think of it as a Happy Birthday to Me or a Hell Night or something like that, and try and watch in that frame of mind. And I think people have a lot more fun with it. So,
yeah, well, that film and Urban Legend, you know, came along with such negative press. And I loved both of them. And I was like, what's wrong with me?
More or less, I love every movie we've picked on the podcast.
Yes, me too.
If I don't outright love them, I love a lot of stuff about them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But we're going to be talking now about the mother of them all, of all postmodern slasher movies, and that is Scream. So, Joseph, do you want to come back in after we play the trailer?
Absolutely.
And here it is.
Hello?
Hello.
Who is this?
You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You making popcorn?
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Oh, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
Someone is playing a deadly game.
It all began with a scream over 911.
Someone who's seen one too many scary movies. Now, he's taken his love of fear.
Hello?
Hello, Sydney.
One step too far.
Do you like scary movies?
What's the point? They're all the same. Some stupid killer stalking some big-breasted girl who can't act, who's always running up the stairs when she should be going out the front door. It's insulting.
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a scary movie. Number one, you can never have sex.
Just me.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
Get another beer. You want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back.
He didn't make the rules.
The police are always on track. If they watch prom night, they save time.
He just kills by them. Don't answer the phone. Don't open the door. Don't try to hide.
Scared, are you?
Scream.
Sydney Prescott has a lot on her plate. It's hard enough to be a teenager coming of age in today's world, let alone have a boyfriend with raging hormones, a father whose life is one business trip after another, and still feel healthy when your mother was brutally murdered 1 year ago. Just when things seem to be getting back to normal for Sydney and her friends, the small town of Woodsboro is once again plagued by a killer, someone who is taking their love of scary movies one step too far. To survive, they must follow the golden movie rules. Don't answer the phone. Don't open the door. Don't try to hide. But most of all, don't scream. Scream was a movie that pretty much flew under my radar during its opening week. It wasn't until I saw a trailer with several of those critical blurbs praising it during its debut weekend that I kind of took notice. So my cousin and I went to a late showing, I guess it's on a Friday or Saturday night. And to say the film left me feeling invigorated would be a massive understatement. With this movie, the slasher film was back in fine form, I'd say. And not long after word of mouth gave the film a big box office mega boost, slasher films left and right were coming out of the woodwork. Some better than others, but for the time being, let's stick with Scream, which I saw at the theater 9 times. Yes, I'm not lying. 9 times. Let me say that like Mr. Rooney. 9 times. But anyway, to say the film is a clever jab at slasher movie tropes and cliches is another understatement. And at the same time, it's often scary and thrilling despite having one foot stuck in comical overtones. For example, the opening scene, it follows that whole pastiche set up by Psycho with introducing a massive star, where that was Janet Leigh, here is Drew Barrymore, and kind of making the audience think they've met, you know, their protagonist only to kind of slaughter them off in really brutal fashion. I think Drew Barrymore's sequence here is a subgenre high point, and I think only a few films have topped it, in my opinion, anyway. But it's a seriously effective moment of shock and suspense and surprise. But Scream, for me, overall, it works so well because of how smart it is. I mean, Kevin Williamson's script may owe a bit to Evil Laugh or There's Nothing Out There, certainly with the Randy character and his insistence on making the rules of the horror genre known. They did that a lot, and There's Nothing Out There with Mike, and then Evil Laugh was with, what was his name? Nathan, do you remember his name? Barney, you're right, Barney. But I think that's all forgivable because I think Scream is just is so darn likable. I mean, all of the characters, I liked every character in the film. You know, none of them were rude or jerks or obnoxious. I mean, you could say Scream kind of set the template for movies to introduce more and more obnoxious characters. But for me, I liked everyone here. If it does have a failing, I think it might be with a protracted finale or the unmasking, which kind of goes on and on. You know, after the killer is explaining their motive, it should have been cut down a little bit. But I think that's merely just a small hindrance. So, I do have a lot more to say. But for now, I will turn it over to Justin. What did you think of Scream?
Yeah, I loved Scream. I had the similar experience. I think it's less so now, but back then, certainly, films sometimes took months, if not 6 months or so, to come to the UK. And I think it's probably a similar thing in Ireland. Whereas I think now, with online piracy, they've kind of the quite often films open, if not the same time, a week later in the UK. But I seem to remember that there was a huge amount of buzz about Scream because by the time it came out in the UK, it had already become a massive hit in the States. So I was really excited to see it, and it didn't let me down. And I've spoken about this before on the podcast, but seeing it at the cinema was just kind of, it was, you know, sometimes it felt like being a fan of slasher movies in the early 90s. It was kind of, it was almost, it was the subgenre that had died, you know, it had just gone to sleep. And it was that kind of mixture of kind of bittersweet mixture of suddenly realizing everyone was a fan of slasher movies, but knowing it kind of it wouldn't last, and of course it didn't last. But at the time it was glorious, and the times I saw Scream at the cinema, which was twice I think, not as many times as you, Joseph, but it really really enjoyed it, and it was fantastic. I remember the audience was acting how you want an audience to act in slasher movies. The first time I saw it, they were screaming, laughing, talking to the screen, but it was all that real camaraderie within the audience rather than being annoyed by people making wise Alec remarks. And so I've seen it many, many times since. And what struck me maybe this time watching it was how old it looks, you know, how the fashions have dated and things like that. And it's kind of, and forgetting, well, not forgetting, but it's like it was made, it came out 16 years ago, didn't it? So was it 16 years ago? Yeah, 16 years ago.
Yeah.
So
1996 to 2012. Yeah, 16. Yeah.
So it's bizarre to think we've almost had 20 years of Scream. I mean, not almost, but, you know, we're getting that way. And I think sometimes, and we've spoken about this before, sometimes you can watch a film too many times and it becomes, you know, its impact lessens. And for me, the beginning, obviously the beginning sequence, Drew Barrymore, is fantastic. You know, really, really well done. And I wasn't bored by watching it this time at all, but the film, for me, really does come into its own once you get to the party sequence at the end. I think that, you know, I actually like it right up to the final, you know, the final moments. I think it works really, really well. And I, for a film that I know so well, I can still watch it and enjoy it. And it's, you know, really is a film I never really get tired of. So yes, I still love Scream, and, you know, very happy to say that. So that's, I've got more to say on it, but that's my tuppence.
Yeah, I pretty much feel the same way. I mean, it's a movie. I mean, I've seen it a million times, but I just never really get tired of it. I mean, I haven't really watched it a lot in the past few years. So, you know, when I watched it again this week, it almost felt like that first time I'd seen it, because it had been a while since I'd seen it. And I was like, oh, this is great. It just really took me back. But how about you, Nathaniel?
Nathaniel. I love Scream, of course. I had a really great theater experience with it, just like you guys mentioned. You know, I love this because it seemed like horror, like, had been, you know, there hadn't been much coming out before Scream, like, not a lot. So, you know, I mean, going to see, like, a slasher movie on the big screen like that when I was, you know, 15, 16, was just an amazing experience, and I'll always remember that. Of course, I love the, you know, the opening scene with Drew Barrymore. That's a really great chase sequence. But my favorite sequence in the movie was the first time Nev Campbell, the character Sydney, encounters Ghostface. And so when he calls her at night, and, you know, first, just like with Drew Barrymore, he's just kind of toying with her a little bit. And eventually, you know, he makes that line, which, you know, it's kind of a jarring line when you hear it, just when he's like, you know, if you hang up on me, you'll die just like your mother. Then he's like, do you want to die, Sydney? Your mother sure didn't. I mean, it's such a cruel, you know, line, you know, think it's just a prank until then. And then, of course, you know, the chase scene that follows is fantastic, in my opinion, you know, where she's just narrowly gets away. I love that scene. I guess I kind of agree with Joseph in a way that even though I love the finale, I love the killers, unmaskings, and all that, it did seem to go on a little bit longer than I kind of expected it to. But, you know, that's like a tiny, tiny complaint for a movie that's just fantastic all the way around. And I love Gail Weathers' character. I think her character is amazing. She's probably my favorite character in the series, in all honesty. But yeah, it's a fantastic, fantastic movie.
Okay, how about you, Eric?
Okay, well, compared to your seeing it 9 times on its initial release, I saw it once. And in my lifetime, I have watched Scream 4 times, 2 of which have been in the last fortnight.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Seriously?
This film opened for you guys in December of 96, and it opened for me, and probably for Justin as well, it opened in May of 97. So it was a good 6 months of all this hype coming up, all these really incredible reviews. So I went to see it. Now, unfortunately, I went to see it in mid-afternoon on a weekday in an empty theater. And I remember liking it, but being a bit disappointed that it wasn't quite what I was hoping for. Now, when I went to see Scream 2, as Nathan said, that was one of the greatest theatrical experiences I've ever had. I went to see Scream 2 twice in the cinema, and both times it was in a packed auditorium. And as Justin was saying, the whole audience were in on it. They were talking to the screen, but in a good way. And it was just absolutely incredible, which is why for many years I thought Scream 2 was a far superior film to Scream. I mean, I do like the film. There's many things in it I like. As Nathan was saying, I love Gale Weathers. I'm a big fan of Courtney Cox because I'm not ashamed to say I love Friends, as untrendy as that has become to say. I mean, I was a big fan of that sitcom, and I think Courtney Cox is incredible as Gale Weathers. I love that opening sequence with Drew Barrymore. Again, I'm a Drew Barrymore fan. I think she's likable in everything she's in, and I think the opening sequence is incredibly vicious, considering sort of the overall fun tone of the film. I love Jamie Kennedy in it as well as Randy. On the downside, I've never liked the killer's costume, the ghost face mask. I find it goofy. I don't find it in any way sinister. Then he might as well have the bear costume from Girls' Night Out on, in my opinion. The whole Sydney and Billy stuff, all their interaction, I find dull as dishwater. I find anytime the two of them are on screen together, the film grinds to a complete halt. And the same with the Dewey and Gale relationship. I've no interest in seeing that either. And like you were saying, I think the ending is too protracted. The film is about 100 minutes. I think it could have worked better for me if it was 90. The character of Dewey as well. I mean, I like David Arquette, but his character is more at home as one of the cops in Halloween 5. I don't think he fits in very well to this film, if I'm honest. I do quite like the film. I can understand why people love the film. For me, Urban Legend and I Know What You Did Last Summer and I Still Know What You Did Last Summer do the same thing 100 times better for me. I've never been a huge fan of the Scream series. I remember after seeing Scream 4 in the cinema last year, I went back and watched Scream 2, which, as I said, was what I thought was the best in the series. And I was kind of bored by it. I haven't warmed anymore to Scream 1 watching it in the last fortnight, but I do understand why people really like it. I mean, it's slick, it's really well acted, it's got plenty of moments in it that I do like, but as a whole, as a 100 minute experience, I'm not as enthused about it as everyone else is. Sorry.
Controversy. But that's good. That's good.
Ooh, hello.
There is a line in it I do love, though. You still there, Justin? Hello.
Is Justin gone?
Yeah,
how did Justin get gone? He's the one with the call.
Yeah. Hello, Justin.
Yeah, so apologies for that. Sorry. Argento chewed through my headphones.
Dario or your cat, Argento?
Yes, I've got Dario Argento with me in the in my little den at the moment. No, that little shit Argento, when he's not dive bombing into dirt trays, he's chews through things, and he literally just chews through the cable of my headphones, so they snapped, so that's where I'd gone. So it wasn't like I'd been suddenly stabbed from behind by Billy Loomis or anything like that. So yes, apologies for that. Who was in Full Flow?
I was just about to say that yes. There is one great line of dialogue that I love in Scream, and that is, "It looks like you fingered the wrong guy again." which surely deserves a little visit from Mr. Williams.
Oh, it does. If I can, let me just see if I can get it up.
Excellent. Well done, Nathan.
We've had that one already. Let me have this one.
Yeah, that's a very good one. Wouldn't you agree, Nathan?
Of course. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I was going to say that Eric's opinion certainly is controversial, but I think that's a good thing.
I think it's a good thing
to have a differing opinions every now and then.
I like it, but I don't love it, is basically it. But I can see why people do love it. So.
No, fair enough.
As far as background information, I really didn't bother. I mean, I have a few things that it's like more personal stuff that most people don't know. But I think, most everyone like Halloween and Friday the 13th know everything there is to know about Scream. But what about you guys?
Well, did you talk about it? I can't remember. We got cut off.
He did.
I did discuss.
Oh, you did, of course. Sorry. Argento's knocked me off course. So, sorry, Joseph, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, as far as background information, I mean, most of my stuff is just personal anecdotes. I mean, everyone knows everything there is to know about Scream. I'd say it's a lot like Halloween and Friday the 13th. But what about you guys? Have you guys got any background information?
Well, I mean, I've never owned Scream on DVD.
Really?
Obviously, yeah.
It's, well, it's funny, isn't it? Mm.
Yeah, okay. Astonishingly. But I was surprised to learn that when Wes Craven was approached to direct Scream, he was in the middle of pre-production on a remake of The Haunting, which I didn't know about. And when that project collapsed, he agreed to do Scream. So, I mean, a Wes Craven version of The Haunting, I'm not sure if that would have been a good thing or a bad thing, but it had to have been better than what eventually came out in 1999, I'd say.
No, no, absolutely. I mean, it's... what about you, Nathan? Have you got any sort of background that you wanted to...
I don't think so. I mean, the only thing I remember background-wise was, didn't, like, the company or something get sued by the makers of the movie Screamers for having a similar title?
They did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, okay. I mean...
Because Screamers was out in 95. I don't know how
Peter Weller.
Isn't there an 80s movie called Screamers too? I mean, a lot of people have similar titles. I mean,
isn't that your favorite nightclub, Justin? Screamers, because you are a screamer.
Screamers,
yeah, because you are a screamer.
I often wonder, and I'm not going to lie, which of the four of us have the best scream.
Oh, we should try it. We should test that out, shouldn't
yeah.
we?
Yeah.
If I tested that out.
Well, I'll tell you what we should do. We should do in an upcoming episode, because we might be doing a special little quiz episode, and maybe we could all do all have a scream and get people to vote who they think is the best screamer. This is an idea.
That
should
be interesting, yeah.
What is the winner again?
This is going to be a disaster, actually.
It would be an absolute disaster. There'll just be loads of perforated eardrums across the nation. Well, across the four people who listen to us. was that you?
That was me.
Who was that?
That was me.
Was it? That was very good, was it?
Good.
Yeah. Now I've got an image of you sat there in your silk underwear, your lingerie with tiara on your head, screaming. And
I'm going to save mine for the actual quiz, because I want to. Okay.
If you're lucky, I might Photoshop a Christmas card for you that will have that image on it.
I'd like to see that. Probably won't need much photoshopping though, will it?
I walked into that one.
Well, it's Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Christmas, yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Very scary Christmas.
Right. Yeah. Well, anyway, back to Scream.
I've got a few more things. Now, again, this, because I'm not a Scream enthusiast as such, this might be well-known stuff, but there's a lot of interesting who could have been in Scream stories. Did you know that for the role of Gail Weathers, they auditioned Brooke Shields and Gian Garofalo?
Janine Garofalo.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, I'd heard.
All right, and for Tatum, which was eventually played by Rose McGowan, they had Melinda Clark from Return of the Living Dead Part 3, and Rebecca Gayhart, who went on to be so fantastic in Urban Legend. They both auditioned for that role. For the role of Sydney, you had Alicia Witt, who went on to be in Urban Legend as well. Brittany Murphy and Reese Witherspoon was approached as well to play Sydney. And
Molly Ringwald as well, wasn't she?
Oh, was she?
Yeah, apparently, and she turned it down.
Oh, because I love Molly Ringwald.
Oh.
Molly Ringwald.
Yeah.
I'm a big Molly Ringwald fan. I would love to see
Molly Ringwald. Molly Ringwald was playing for who?
For Sydney, the character.
For Sydney.
To be honest.
She should have been a little too old, wouldn't she?
Well, she's 27, apparently.
She was 16, 17 around the time of The Breakfast Club, so that was about 10 years before. So she would have been mid-20s, which is what a lot of the actors in Scream are, so...
Well, exactly.
So I guess that's about right.
Because David Arquette was younger, wasn't he, than most of the other... He's younger than Skeet Ulrich.
Yeah.
So even though he's playing an older character. But sorry, yeah, carry on, Eric, if there's anything
else. Who else is there? For the Jamie Kennedy role of Randy, they were considering Brecken Meyer, wasn't he the guy in the video game in Freddy's Dead? And he also went to be in Garfield the movie,
Clueless,
which is kind of a guilty pleasure of mine because I think Garfield is really, really cute. Sorry,
I love Garfield.
Yeah,
you've got lots of guilty pleasures, haven't you, Eric?
I have plenty. The filming of it was April to June of '96, and the budget was $15 million, and it made about $60 zillion. Oh, Skeet Ulrich, I've always wondered, like, what on earth is going on with his name? His real name is Brian Ray Trout. He was nicknamed Skeeter when he was in Little League because he was small and fast, like a mosquito. And Ulrich is the name of his stepfather's surname, but his birth name is Brian Ray Trout. So there you go.
It could have been Skeet Trout, which isn't
Skeet Trout. Yeah. He was actually
Skeet Surfing from Top Secret.
Mm. Yeah, he'd worked with Neve Campbell. Do you say Neve Campbell or Neve Campbell?
I said Neve.
Yeah, I think Neve is the way it's pronounced on sort of from what I've heard. Anyway, he was in The Craft the year before with Neve Campbell. So
that's right.
Yeah, I have a few other bits and pieces. Like, it was edited by Patrick, Lussier, who went on to direct the My Bloody Valentine remake, and he's currently attached to direct Halloween 3. I don't know if that's going to come to pass, but... Do you have anything, Justin?
I've got a few bits and pieces, and again, whether or not these are real, in so much a lot of it's gleaned from IMDb, but what was the other thing? Apparently, Drew Barrymore was originally cast as Sidney Prescott, but actually asked to play the part of Casey because she thought it would actually, if she got killed off, like in a like a nod, as I think you were saying, Joseph, to Psycho, you know, sort of killing off your main character, anything could happen. And the irony actually with the screen series is it became very, very predictable that none of the main characters would die, is essentially apart from Randy.
I always hated that.
Yeah, but it's kind of the irony, the Scream starts off that you've got, you know, anyone could die in this, but certainly by the later films, it becomes almost a little bit too comfortable, doesn't it, about who, you know, who will live and who will die. Apparently Bob Weinstein, who obviously the link between the Weinsteins and slasher movies is obviously they got their break really with The Burning. And so I was surprised actually with there wasn't some kind of in-joke to The Burning in Scream, because I thought that would have been a nice touch. I mean, there were in-jokes in it, like with the cameo of Wes Craven dressed in Freddy's jumper as a janitor.
And also, I think as Casey mentions at the start, I liked the first Nightmare on Elm Street, but the sequel sucked. Because, of course, the sequels had minimal Wes Craven input. I think only part three did. So that was his little dig, I think, at New Line.
No, absolutely. And apparently Bob Weinstein thought the, like you did, Eric, actually, that the mask was stupid. And,
yeah.
But they persuaded him to let them film the Casey scene at the beginning, and he saw it and he liked it enough for them to carry on with it. But it's said, and again, whether or not this is true, I don't know, that they had chosen another mask as an alternative. Now, I don't know what that would have been, and whether or not they're knocking around somewhere in some drawer somewhere is an alternative opening sequence of Scream with a different mask, a bit like with Halloween, where it very nearly was a clown mask, wasn't it, that was going to be used for Michael Myers rather than the mask that we know and love today. Apparently, again, I think I did read this somewhere, that Drew Barrymore, Wes Craven, was kind of not nasty to her, but to keep her angry and scared and upset in the opening sequence. He kept on telling her stories about horrible things happening to animals because she was an animal lover, and that kind of kept her upset throughout it. I mean, the IMDb trivia section have some really stupid things in it. For instance, like Rose McGowan discovered she could actually fit through a PET flap. Which is kind of just the most pointless bit of trivia ever, really, isn't it? It says special effects artists use about 50 gallons of blood, and obviously there was a lot of blood used in Scream. What else was there? The David Arquette's character Dewey was meant to die at the end of Scream. It was shot that way that he was dead. And someone pointed out that when Gale Weathers falls on his body, he doesn't flinch. I mean, he's evidently dead. But they didn't realise. Well, I think with test screenings, they realised that audiences really, really liked Deputy Dewey, the character. So they kind of brought him back sort of at the end. So they sort of thought they'd keep him around, which obviously he became a mainstay of all the sequels, which, to be honest, I think sometimes towards the end of the, as I said before, some of the later sequels, that this whole kind of on-off romance with Courtney Cox is a little, you know, it's a bit trite, really, isn't it? And it gets, you know, it's almost kind of rom-com than,
yes,
you know, ultimately. Obviously, the Scream, the mask, is based on the Scream, the painting by Edvard Munch, you know, the famous painting. So I think it's you know, again, it's one of those things that's gone into the lexicon of horror now, isn't it? Of like the hockey mask and Michael Myers mask, and you know, is the scream mask is the one that you see still now. Actually, whenever you go out shopping, you know, around Halloween time, the you see scream masks around more than any other type of mask, I would say. But yeah, no, those sort of bits and pieces. There's a few more bits, but Joseph, you said you've got quite a lot more to say on it.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure how true this is, but apparently in a lot of these movies where people are talking on the phone, they talk to a stagehand off screen, and then the ADR in like voices later over phones. But from what I understand, they didn't want the actors to know who the voice behind the ghost face was, to kind of, you know, create more fear, like believable fear. So they actually had the actor Roger L. Jackson call them during those scenes, so it would sound more genuine, like they were talking to some creepy husky voiced person rather than some stagehand going, "Yes, do you like scary movies?" in a kind of monotone, normal voice. But not sure how true that is, but that's one of the things I heard. Most of the stuff I have, it's just little personal things, like when Scream. Excuse me. When Scream first came out, I had a horror movie website, and I had a little section where I did a little thing on Scream, and I'd gone through the movie, and I was trying to pinpoint when the killer strike, who was behind the mask, because obviously, getting into some spoilers here, the killer turns out to be two killers, and it's Billy and Stu. So I kind of got, for some reason, I got obsessed wondering who killed who or who killed whom. Sorry. I wondered when it was Billy, when it was Stu. So I compiled this list, and for some reason I got it in my head that some of it didn't add up. So I thought maybe, you know, there was this third killer going around, you know, as like a theory. And then funny enough, in Scream 3, they used that third killer theory, that it turned out to be true. So I always wonder if the writers had seen that list I had compiled on the website. And it's always stuck with me. I've always wondered if I was responsible for that or not, or if it was always planned that way. Hello?
Sorry, guys. I've just got to I've got to chuck the cat out because he's being a real bastard. Hold on.
He's eating the headphones again.
It's the second set of headphones he's attacking it. So carry on.
Please tell me you got all that at least.
Oh, Argento. You did, yeah. Okay.
Which one of you said something about there was a moment in Scream that is completely absurd?
All right, that was me.
Okay.
I got something you can lead off from that. So
okay,
I'll do it when he comes back.
Okay, hurry back. I miss you, Justin.
Hello, I'm back.
Oh, he's back.
Justin.
Hi. Sorry about that. It's I just thought it'd be a nice idea to have a cat sat on my lap throughout the podcast, but he's in one of his having one
eating
of his turns.
Moods, yeah.
Well, I kind of did wonder with obviously Kevin Williamson, you know, obviously wrote this, and he was obviously a massive fan of slasher movies. And do you remember all the stuff? Because you were sort of saying about like whether or not that affected the later films. But I don't know if you remember when the second one's being made, they didn't print the script on unphotocopyable paper or something. So like the colour of it, they kept on changing it and sending out dummy scripts to try and there was loads and loads of talk all around the internet about what the film's going to be about, or and they did everything they could to keep the twists behind. But I'm sure Kevin Williamson probably did read a lot of that feedback. And I imagine sort of the stuff for the later films, like, you know, the third film, it's probably did come from that. Do you reckon, guys?
Are we still there?
Yeah, we're still here.
Yeah. I'm fighting on you guys to respond.
See, I already said what I need to say, so it's just basically Eric and Nathan now. I guess you can fight over who wants to go first.
Yeah. Well, have you got anything else to say, Eric?
Well, on a different note, I mean, I was mentioning earlier, I think there's a moment of silliness towards the end, a moment of stupidity by the killer. Spoiler alert. And that is where they leave Sydney unguarded to go take care of Gail Weathers, which after the sort of their year of planning this, you know, murder spree,
yeah,
I thought was a bit stupid. I think it rivals the Wrong Turn 4 moment. Well, it's probably not as bad as the Wrong Turn 4 moment, in fairness, but...
Well, to be fair, they both had been stabbed like several times and were losing blood, so maybe they...
Yeah, well, that was another thing. Why didn't they do that after they dispatched of Sydney?
Yeah, why did they... I mean, it's like they needed her as their audience or something.
Mm. Yeah, at that point, Sydney was not really much of a character, as more of an audience tool to show what was happening. So, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. I have one thing that's always bugged me about Scream. It's when they're in the video store and Randy's trying to say that the police are off track with what they're suspecting and that if they'd watched Prom Night, they'd save time. I've seen Prom Night a billion times. I know the killer. I know the killer's motive. It has nothing to do with what's going on in Scream. So why does he think watching Prom Night's going to help them solve the case?
Mm. Yeah, especially...
The heroine's not related to the killers.
Yeah. Well, especially as he's such the big slash movie fan, isn't he? Mm.
I think what he means... I think what he's saying is it's always someone very close to you.
Mm.
Yeah. I guess so. It's just weird that they use Prom Night of all movies to pick. I mean, I would think Happy Birthday to Me, the motive in this movie, gets closer to Happy Birthday to Me in a way.
Yeah, that would have been more clever, I think. That would have been
Prom Night is probably more of a higher profile name than Happy Birthday to Me, I'd say. So that's probably why they chose Prom Night.
And they also had the whole Jamie Lee Curtis thing running through it, didn't they?
Yeah, getting her boobies out.
Hmm.
Hmm. But let's see. Another thing of background information. I went into this, now this is probably not true and I still don't believe it to this day, but I went into this horror movie chat room and someone there was pretending to be, or if they weren't pretending, it might've been them, but I think they were pretending to be one of the actors who in the film where they were joking around and, Principal Hembree, who's played by the Fonz, he rips the mask off of them. Those two students that are playing jokes.
Yeah.
You remember them? Yeah. This person in this chat room was pretending to be one of those actors. And, yeah, I didn't believe him. But at the time, this person had a lot of inside knowledge that a lot of people really wouldn't have. So I kind of always wondered if he really was in that horror movie chat room or if it was just somebody just, you know, kind of having a laugh. But I always thought that was kind of amusing.
And what did they say? Does anything they said?
Yeah, basically just... he knew a lot of, I'm going off memory here. This is in like 96 or 97. He basically knew a lot of stuff about Neve Campbell that really wasn't online, that didn't surface until later. And he knew a lot of stuff like behind the scenes stuff and that didn't surface until later. And everything that surfaced kind of confirmed what he said. But at the same time, I kind of had a hard time buying it. But so now I'm always wondering if it really was this person on that internet relay chat room, or if it was just somebody who maybe just had a good guess, take a good guess that it came true. I don't know.
Hmm. Well, I think, you know, if you were in the film, I imagine, you know, lots of people do Google themselves, don't they? And maybe, you know, go online and go in chat rooms and stuff. So it wouldn't be past. I mean, they weren't exactly big. I mean, they were in the end sequence, weren't they? But they all go off to check out the hung principal, don't they? which could be taken a couple of ways.
How do they know that? Do they see him in the shower?
I don't know.
Well, he is the Fonz, so yes. Yeah. Henry Winkler, by the way, that's his name. Yes. Henry Winkler.
Yeah.
One more thing. The mask, I said earlier that you two were nitpicking about Michael Myers' mask always changing, and a lot of people, you know, are upset about that. In the first Scream, his mask does change a lot. The mouth is longer in some scenes, but in the scene where Principal Hembree is killed, it's the shorter mouth. And I'd read that someone had thrown in the wrong prop that day, and for some reason or another, I don't know why, they could not find the mask they'd been using, so they used that one in that one scene where it's like shorter. But it's very noticeable when he's leaning over looking at the dead body of Principal Hembree that the mouth is so much shorter than the normal mask that they use throughout the rest of the movie and the rest of the series.
I never noticed that.
But did anyone else notice that?
No,
I didn't.
You have to go back and watch, but it's noticeably shorter. It's like, whoa, that's a different mask.
Can I ask, was that mask commercially available before Scream was made? Is that how they chose it?
I'd seen it a couple of years before Scream. I'd seen that mask before, because when I saw Scream, I was like, hey, I've seen that mask before.
Well, apparently, again, it's whether or not this is true, but it's Wes Craven saw the mask and knew it was but they had to change it slightly to so it wasn't copyrighted. Was what I read. Again, whether or not it's true, I don't know. But yeah, no, it's interesting, isn't it? Because going back to the you know, what my understanding of what happened, and it kind of mirrors what you said, Joseph, in so much that when the film came out, it wasn't an immediate hit, was it? It wasn't like a. It took
a few weeks because it came out around the same time as Titanic, and you know, obviously Titanic was this box office juggernaut. But then they had these commercials with like them interviewing people, like, "What did you think of the movie Scream?" And they're like, "Oh, we loved it. We'd go back and see it." So then it kind of generated this buzz, and then the box office just kept going up after week after week.
Because that's kind of the definition of a sleeper hit, really, isn't it? It's kind of like, it's a film like most recently, like something like Insidious, which again didn't open massive, but through word of mouth kept on growing and growing and growing.
And the box office for Scream, I mean, the budget I think was relatively low. I mean, I don't remember the thing, but obviously it made like probably 10 times its budget. So
15 million apparently was the budget.
And it was 161 million.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
Mm. I mean, the other thing with Scream that kind of strikes me is how violent it is. And that kind of, and we talked about that a little bit before, but watching it again, I was thinking it would have been much easier for them to have done a less violent film. I know it sounds weird, but, you know, a slasher movie, but like the violence is very kind of gritty, isn't it? For a comedy, from what essentially is a comedy. And apparently there was loads of the film got into loads of trouble with the American censors, and they kept on asking for cuts. And still, actually, on the British release, the scene at the beginning with Casey's boyfriend with the guts is still missing on the British release. Because in the American release, do you see his guts on the floor or slightly?
There's two versions. But I mean, Nathan had said in the past that he preferred the quick cut of Casey hanging on the tree instead of the slow zoom to show all the gore. And I agree. I think it's better when they cut out all the gore because it's flashier. This is one instance where they cut out the gore and it works.
Or maybe because I read that it was the boyfriend. You know, when she turns on the lights and sees his guts outside, but it's very quick cut. But apparently there was more of that.
Yeah, there's a couple of versions.
And the Casey scene is different as well, as Joseph was saying. In the uncut version, it's a smooth camera pan into her body, whereas in the cut version, it's kind of a strobe effect as it pans in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
And I prefer the strobe effect because I think it's more jarring.
Well, apparently the other thing I just read was Harvey Weinstein or Bob Weinstein said to the MPAA, he got fed up with them sort of cutting it, and he just said, like, watch it as a comedy. And apparently that was enough for them to stop cutting it. So that's why it's still brutal. But certainly with all of the Scream films, they have that kind of brutality to them, don't they? That kind of, like in Scream 4, for instance, the killing of the girl, the neighbour, is very nasty, isn't it? And Wes Craven seems to have a real art for that, I kind of guess, is something he seems to quite enjoy doing, you know, actually really going, you know, because there's certainly, I would say, the Scream movies, the violence in them is nastier than certainly I Know What You Did Last Summer films or the Urban Legend films, although they've got gore in them. The Scream films have got, they're very much, they have that kind of hyper-violence, you know, with them, which, but it still works, isn't it? And ultimately, you know, I mean, one of the best known trivia bits is that it was originally called Scary Movie, wasn't it? That was the name that Kevin Williamson sold script as. And of course, then they actually did a series of spectacularly unfunny horror spoofs called Scary Movie.
Unfunny.
Yeah, I'm with Justin on this one, I'm afraid.
I like the first Scary Movie.
Yeah. I hated the first one so much. It was my worst cinema going experiences. I hated it, and I haven't watched any of the others. So maybe
they get worse.
I'm sure they do.
I kind of like part four. My favorite part of part four, though, and it's awful, but it's probably my favorite scene, is when they're making fun of the Japanese, you know, grudge type films. Hmm. And she's talking to the kid, and she's supposed to be talking to him. They have subtitles at the bottom, and the subtitles they say things like, "How are you? What are you doing in this house?" But what she's saying is "Hitachi Benihana Teriyaki." I mean, she's just using like American. Japanese words that almost all Americans know, like treating it like she's speaking the language, like karate, judo, sumo, samurai.
There might be some funny.
That's probably the funniest scene in part four. So
okay.
Yeah,
okay, but I didn't. But yes, they say originally it was going to be a scary movie, the Kevin Williamson. I can't remember what the original point I was going to make now was, but it's gone.
Oh, sorry,
but,
Justin.
No, that's all right. No, it's maybe that was the point. I can't remember. But
well, there is a movie from 90 or 91 with John Hawks in it called Scary Movie. And I've never seen it, and I'm not sure what it's about, but I think it might be a slasher film.
Mm, okay, interesting.
When are you going to mention the murder methods in this movie being kind of the same?
Yes, I was going to mention that. That's one of the things that when I was talking about Bloody Homecoming, that, you know, has various different methods, whereas in Scream, it's predominantly just the knife. Apart from maybe Tatum, well, obviously, apart from Tatum getting caught in the cat flap, which is a very unique and very early 80s style. It reminded me of something like from My Bloody Valentine. It's so bizarre. Hmm. But generally, it's just the knife, which, you know, it could have done with a bit more variety, I thought.
Hmm. I think Scream 2 has Scream 2 definitely has more variety in its kill sequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, they had to have the handy, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh,
well, I was going to... Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask what your favorite scene was, because one of my favorite scenes, I had a question leading off of it, but what is your favorite scene from the first Scream?
I think mine is, obviously I love the Sydney first attack, but I already mentioned that, so I'll also mention the scene with Tatum in the garage. I love, like, at first it's all jokey, and she's like, you know, "Oh, you know, don't kill me, Mr. Ghostface, I want to be in the sequel," you know, like, kind of treating it as a joke. Until, you know, what happens. But I also need to point out the fact that she throws a beer bottle and smashes it on the killer's face. I mean, this is one tough killer. I mean, he takes a beer bottle to the face and it's fine.
And shouldn't the person who turns out to be the killer have this big bruise on their face for the rest of the movie? Yeah.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. Well, they get bashed around quite a lot, don't they? And they don't... Yeah. They don't have any kind of, you know, any bruising or any, you know, and also they would stink of beer as well, wouldn't they?
They should,
Well, they probably would have anyway.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. But having said that, you can't, you know, when these kind of films, you can't, if you start pulling them apart, it's probably they're quite flimsy. And I think ultimately with a double, two killers, then you can obviously, presumably they were both playing the killer, weren't they?
Yeah, and they can get away with a lot of stuff, yeah.
So. Yes, absolutely. I mean, what do you think, just out of interest, I mean, do you think do you think we are looking back on these films now because they are 15 to 70 or however many, you know, there's quite a long time has elapsed since the Scream and the first wave of post-Scream slashers came out. Do you think we look at them now with kind of rose-tinted glasses, or do you think, you know, what are your thoughts?
I don't anyway.
I don't know if I can answer that. I don't think I can answer that for me, because I've loved them even back then, so I feel the same.
See, Body Boy asked that very same question on the forums, and I disagree with him. He thinks that everyone likes them now because it's nostalgia. It's not for me. I liked them when they first premiered, and I still like them.
Yeah, well, same here. But I just wonder if there's if the people who dismiss them as trendy horror are now maybe there's coming back and kind of finding them anew, perhaps.
I mean, I'm sure some people are doing that, but for me, no. I don't think it's nostalgia. I've always liked them.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was going to say is one of my favorite scenes in the film is when Sydney's in the police car and she's trying to call the cops, and she's like, "I'm at," you know, and the the back hatch of the police car is opening up, and you very slowly see the killer like coming into frame, and then he just jumps up and tries to grab her. But I had a question about that scene because she goes, "This is Sidney Prescott. I'm at Stu Mocker's house. He's going to try to kill me." I wonder if she inadvertently gave the killer away, or if she thought it was Stu, or if it was like, "I'm at Stu Mocker's house. He's going to try and kill me." If she was just speaking generally, or if she thought it was Stu the whole time. I always wondered that.
Well, there's a scene, isn't there, where Randy comes up and there's Stu, and they're kind of fighting, aren't they, outside, and going, he's the killer, no, he's the killer. And she can't decide, can she? Because I think she was a hair's breadth away from shooting one of them, wasn't she? And that could have been Randy.
Yeah, and I know I've asked this before, but I always forget. Did you guess who the killer or killers were?
I can't remember because I've seen it so many times now. I don't think so. I don't think so.
I've said it before. I always guessed one. I always thought it was Stu, but I never thought it was Billy because he was just too obvious. And I thought Stu was, you know, one of those characters kind of perfunctory. I mean, everyone has a purpose. I mean, Randy was the know-it-all. Billy was the boyfriend. Tatum was the best friend. Stu was just kind of the hanger-on. So, you know, he didn't really have much of a point. So, I figured he'd be the killer, and he was. And I had no idea it'd be two killers, though. And I thought that was a very interesting, very clever twist on that.
I also think it's kind of, I mean, because Matthew Lillard, the only films I've seen him in is this and Serial Mom, and he plays the same kind of goofy character, doesn't he, in both, apart from obviously he's not.
He plays Shaggy in Scooby-Doo.
That's right, but it's the same kind of, like, over-the-top kind of, and I can imagine that could be quite annoying to live with, you know, if that was his real-life personality.
Yes.
But it kind of works okay in this, doesn't he? It doesn't, and that's testament to either him or Wes Craven or whoever, that he's not incredibly annoying in this, because I think he could have been, couldn't he? I think he's quite a good actor, but I don't know if he's done anything more dramatic where he doesn't do like kind of pulling faces and that kind of thing. I don't know.
Well, I mentioned one movie he did on a recently seen about 5 or 6 episodes ago called Messages Deleted, which is a horror film. He pretty much plays it straight there. I thought he's a little bit miscast because I kept seeing him as Stu, but for the most part, he did kind of a, you know, no bug eyes, no goofy mannerisms or anything.
Yeah, interesting. Was it anything else you want to say to wrap it up on Scream, Joseph?
I don't think so. I guess just one thing I always liked when, and Nathan said, was talking about the garage scene. I still get a kick out of this, and I know you guys don't like Scary Movie, but I always loved how they spoofed it in Scary Movie. There's a big fat girl trying to go through the dog door, and she's like, I'm just a day player. And then she breaks the garage door, and I always thought that was funny.
Well, maybe I have to watch Scary Movie again. I just know, I just remember it being mortifying at the cinema, but Who knows? So anything else before we move on to feedback?
Yeah, I don't have anything else, so I guess we can move on to feedback unless anyone else has anything else to say.
I don't, except, you know, I'll send you a copy. Bam! Bitch went down.
Yes.
I was just looking at Matthew Lillard's IMDb page just to see if he was in anything dramatic, and I can confirm he had his debut in, I think it's a Shakespeare, based on a Shakespeare play. It's Ghoulies 3, Ghoulies Go to College.
Oh, my God. I love Ghoulies Go to College.
You love everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that movie really is awesome.
Right. Well, that was Scream. So, yeah. If you enjoyed Scream or enjoyed or disagreed with what we said about it, why not write in or phone in and let us know? And here are the contact details to let you know how to do that.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Okay. Well,
all right. Who wants to go first? Any of you?
I will go first.
Okay. Go ahead. Nathan's got feedback. Oh, my God.
I know. This is amazing.
Well, just say no, just so we can be happy.
No.
Yay!
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, from Cinema Do Meep, which is an amazing blog. Everybody should check that out.
You should.
You know, I love Meep. He writes in and says, Dear boys, recently I have been longing for a Sleepaway Camp podcast. Any chance one might be on the horizon. Any of the three will be great. Is Fellatio Ross available for an interview? Oh, matron. Oh, Lord. I didn't want to say that. Perhaps Pamela Springsteen can be reached. Would love to hear her take on the role as well. In any case, the Sleepaway Camp series, not including the dreadful return to Sleepaway Camp or the recent reworking of old footage with Part 4, is good, goofy fun. It would be also fun to hear about a discussion of female killers in slasher films. I suppose, in a way, the idea of a female slasher villain grew to popularity with Mrs. Voorhees dispensing of those teenagers who'd rather make love instead of, oh, I don't know, keep an eye on swimming children in Friday the 13th. And has had a lasting effect to this day with films such as, spoiler alert, High Tension, Urban Legend, and All the Boys Love Mandy Lane. Perhaps a top three. Either way, it would be a lot of fun to listen to, and a rare glimpse into female villainy in this wonderful subgenre. Keep doing what you're doing so very well. XOXO, meet. P.S. Dancing at the Disco, bumper to bumper. Wait a minute, where's me jumper?
Do you guys get that reference?
I don't get that reference, I'm afraid. No, I don't.
Do you, Justin?
No.
It's an Irish proto-punk band from the early 90s called Sultans of Ping FC.
Oh, yeah,
and they had a song called Where's Me Jumper? Mm. And it actually did quite well in the UK. It was number one in the indie chart for quite a while.
Okay. I remember the name. I can't remember any of their songs. But no, thank you, Meep. And who knows, maybe Sleepaway Camp should be our number 50.
Mm, what do y'all think about the female villain discussion?
Well, that's a good idea, but are there really 12 female villains?
There's not 12, but I think maybe we could,
do a segment on...
Discuss it, yeah, just do some kind of segment on it would be
fun. That's a good idea. Maybe we could do that.
Because I really want to talk about Brenda more.
Oh, I love her.
As if we haven't enough already.
Well, thank you, Meep. We shall take that on board, and there may be a Sleepaway Camp version, and we're always looking for good top three suggestions. So, thank you for that. Okay, well, who's up next? Eric, do you want to go next?
Yeah, I've got one here from Dan Dominguez, and he says, "Hi, fellas, long time no write. Thanks for the Halloween 2 podcast. It helped me get through Hurricane Sandy here in New York City. Mm. When me lights went out," which it sounds very Irish, I think it might be a typo. "When me lights went out for 4 days, I had nothing to listen to but what was saved on my iPod. So in the dark, with my little portable speakers, I listened to your Halloween and Halloween 2 podcast over the course of 4 days. No, it was that long.
No.
He says, making sure to listen to it in increments so I would have enough to stretch out over 4 days. Thanks for entertaining me in the dark, wink, wink. I haven't written in so long. I should congratulate you on a job well done with all your recent podcasts, but there are so many to number. In a nutshell, Friday 2 was great. The Prowler was great. Bloody Moon was hilarious. But I want to talk a little about Halloween 2 because it was the first movie I watched when I got my power back, the Universal Blu-ray, that is, not the new Scream Factory one. When I was a kid, my first exposure to the film was the TV edit. For years, I thought that was Halloween 2. It wasn't until I rented the VHS version and saw the original cut that I realized what a butcher job Universal had done on the TV version. A similar thing happened with Hell Night. I thought the Hell Night that I taped off television in the 80s was the movie until I rented the media VHS tape and saw nearly 10 minutes of, in quotes, new material. In the case of Hell Night, though, I thought the TV edit actually helped the film's pace. Back to Halloween 2, this recent viewing made me realize what a flawed movie it is. I hadn't seen it for a while, but its weaknesses really jumped out at me this time, mainly the fact that the killer is still on the loose and no one thinks to give Laurie any police security, and the ridiculously desolate hospital. The film also has pacing problems, but despite all those things, like you guys, watching Halloween 2 provides so much nostalgia for me that I love the movie no matter what. I also wanted to discuss some recently viewed. On Halloween night, I saw a big screen double bill of the Maniac remake and the Irish horror comedy Stitches at a scary movie festival here in New York. I wasn't thrilled.
Stitches?
Stitches, yeah.
Stitches?
What did I say?
No, you said Stitches. But not
that's okay.
I was making fun of you and Justin saying stitches, 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 or whatever it was. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. I wasn't thrilled by either of them. I'm not a huge fan of the original Maniacs, so this one would have had to really knock my socks off, but it's really stilted with weak performances from Elijah Wood and most of the ladies in the cast. They're not helped by some eye-rollingly bad dialogue and the movie's gimmick, seeing the whole movie from the killer's POV. That POV thing was a really bad idea because it kills suspense and makes Elijah Wood seem like he's acting from a recording studio. But on the bright side, Maniac does have some vicious gore effects and a killer retro score. Stitches was slightly more entertaining, but I'm just not a fan of outright horror comedies like this one. Too broad and too silly for my taste. One recent winner, though, was Asylum Blackout, a.k.a. The Incident. Have you guys seen this one? Really intense and disturbing. And here's a thought for a top three. Forgive me if you've already done it. Ridiculous or laughable slasher motivations. In other words, the most outlandish reason for the killer going nuts. I'm thinking this could be a giallo heavy top three. Signing off for now. Thanks for the fun times. And I want to let you know that I voted for you guys in the podcast awards. Peace out, Dan Dominguez.
Oh, thank you, Dan.
Yes.
Always a pleasure to hear from you.
Okay, we'll go back through those points. Has anyone seen Asylum Blackout, aka The Incident?
No.
No.
I haven't even heard of it.
I'm curious.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah. As for laughable slasher motivations, I have a vague recollection we'd done something similar, have we?
I think we did do...
Revelations we did, didn't we?
Yes. Yes. But we could do a twist on the most ridiculous ones, couldn't we? Mm-hmm. So that's duly noted.
Yes, and as I said, it would probably be giallo heavy because they are noted for the ridiculous motivations.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, and thank you, Dan, for voting for us in the podcast awards, even if it didn't work out for us in the end.
Woohoo.
Has anyone seen the Maniac remake or Stitches?
Oh, I'd love to see the Maniac remake.
I've heard lots of good stuff about the Maniac remake. That's actually the first negative response I've heard to it.
Okay. Okay, I have heard a couple of negative responses to it. So
oh, have you? I've spoken to a number of people who saw it at Fright Fest in London in August, and they said it was very good.
Mm. Mm. Well, I know someone who saw it at Stiggy's.
Yeah.
And, well, no, they didn't. They didn't like it. They said it was a bit nauseating.
All right.
So,
Has anyone seen the TV version of Hell Night? I'm assuming from Dan's email that it doesn't. It has no new footage from the... It's just a cut-down version.
Mm, no, it sounds like it, doesn't it? I'd be intrigued to see what that was and whether or not... Because it seemed current practice at the time to make TV versions of films. Hell Night was quite a relatively low-budget film, wasn't it? So maybe they didn't do that. But
it's quite low on gore, so I'm imagining 10 minutes is quite a lot. Like he says, when he rented the VHS, he saw 10 minutes of new footage. So,
because apart from the gore, isn't it? And there's no nudity, is there?
No, not that I can think of. No, but there is Linda Blair's ample bosoms.
There is.
But they're kept under a sort of medieval dress from the time. Yeah,
restrained, aren't they, from popping out? And of course, Linda Blair was in Scream, wasn't she? That was a cameo.
Yes, I forgot to mention that. That was another one of my favourite moments in Scream was her little cameo as the reporter.
How does it feel to be almost kind of brutally murdered?
How does it feel?
That's kind of a rude reporter.
But
As for Stitches, I didn't get to see that. That opened the same weekend as the Horrorthon was on here in Dublin, so I didn't get to see it. But I did meet the director there. Okay. I said hello to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I haven't seen the film. But I heard it's okay. I didn't hear anyone saying it was awful, and I didn't hear anyone say it was brilliant.
Okay. Well, interesting.
It's got the UK comedian Ross Noble in it, who I quite like, so interested in seeing that, yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Dan. Shall I go next? I've got... an email here, which I shall read out, and it's from Becky Simpson, and she says, "Hi chaps, just want to drop you a line about some films my partner and I watched recently. Firstly, Double Exposure, which I know is discussed on your website. We got this the other day after seeing the trailer and being quite intrigued. Now, I would say it leaves a lot to be desired and is as hammy as a William Shatner sandwich in places. But the opening dream sequences look great, if like no dream anyone has ever had, and the relationship between the brothers was handled well, giving each character more personality than your usual 1980 slasher.
okay, the ending hardly plays fair, although we ended up discussing how much of what we've seen was real and how much was a dream. Overall, we both enjoyed it, and would be interested to hear if you ever cover it. Just briefly on Double Exposure, Eric very kindly sent me a copy of the DVD recently, which I haven't had a chance to watch yet. Is it a good version?
It is good. Yeah, I have to say there's great extras on it. I think there's two audio commentaries actually.
Okay, interesting. Mm. Yeah, because it's one of those films.
Sorry, there's one great sequence in it where he puts a rattlesnake into a bag and then puts it over someone's head, which I think is incredibly cruel.
Well, that was the thing, that put me off that film a little bit was I found it quite mean-spirited. I remember it was the whole film was quite mean-spirited, which I know a lot of slasher movies are, but obviously I kind of prefer the sort of slightly more tongue-in-cheek, sort of films like Scream, Lampoons. But what about you guys? What about you, Nathan? You thoughts on Double Exposure?
I have not seen Double Exposure.
Oh, okay. Well, it might be one interesting one to pick for the show at some point. What about you, Joseph?
No, I have not seen that one yet.
Oh, okay. Mm. Well, there you go. It might be quite interesting to actually pick a film that some of us haven't seen yet. But
But make a change from me being the only one who hasn't seen it, which is usually the case.
Yeah. Well, Becky goes on to say, the other film I wanted to hear your thoughts on is Amsterdammed, the Dutch movie from 1988. So much this screamed 80s. The cop's look was almost a time capsule piece, and his designer stubble and bad boy leather jacket. That one of you must have some affection for it. It has some great ideas. The killer's diving suit look was superb, if massively impractical, and use of canals is inspired. Some excellent deaths too, not least of all the awesomely dressed hooker who surprises a boatload of tourists. Not the greatest film ever, but how can you fault a film that includes a mounted police car in a car chase and has, includes mounted police in a car chase and has a pretty sweet speedboat chase to boot. Anyway, this email is long enough. I'll wrap it up now. Thanks for the great podcast. Keep up the good work, Becky. Thank you, Becky. And Amsterdammed is a film I saw many, many years ago, and I remember next to nothing about it, apart from I do remember the body falling out onto startled tourists on the kind of tourist boat, but that's about all I remember about it. How about you guys? Any of you seen Amsterdam?
No.
I like it. It's on my website, by the way, if you want to see it. Hmm. It's a little too long, but it's got a lot of, it reminds me a lot of Eyeball and that whole touristy thing. It's really goofy.
Hmm. Cool. What about you, Nathan?
Sorry, I was just going to say, normal service is resumed. I haven't seen this film.
Okay. What about you, Nathan? Is it one you've had the pleasure of?
Well, I'm fairly certain I've seen it, but like you, Justin, I remembered nothing about this movie.
Okay. Well, maybe it's another one that would be might interesting to watch, because, I mean, there aren't many Dutch slasher movies, as far as I'm aware.
The Dutch specialise in a different type of cinema.
They do, yes. Usually on sale at supermarkets, I believe.
Yes.
So thank you ever so much, Becky, for writing in. That's very good to hear from you, and hope you enjoy the show. And I think you've got one more message, have we?
Yeah, this is from Jason Johns. I'm guessing I'm pronouncing that right. It's J-A-H-N-S. But anyway, he says, "Hey, guys, love your show. The Halloween episode was great. Not sure if you've answered this already, but what is the rarest slasher each of you own? I have the 1973 movie Psychopath, about a children's TV host who stalks and kills parents who abuse their children. The VHS cover has a hand-drawn woman cowering in fear, while evil eyes are shown above, and the letters of the word psychopath are dripping in blood. I also have a Canadian VHS of Ghost Keeper, which cover features an old guy with his arm ripped off. Not sure which labels release these, as I don't have them with me at the moment. Keep up the fantastic work. Oh, and sorry, forgot to add that my Psychopath VHS is not the one released by Family Time. That one, released in 1989, has a black background, and mine is white, with hand-drawn creepy eyes." That's from Jason Johns.
Well, thank you, Jason.
To answer his question, I don't really have any rare movies anymore. I've pretty much sold mine over the years, So, I mean, most of the stuff I have is Blu-ray now. So, and those are obviously aren't rare.
What's really rare anymore anyway? I mean, you can
find really rare
any
anymore.
Movie that you want, you can find.
Yeah.
Well, no, I presume if you want, he means like original VHS copies.
Well,
or
yes.
Something.
Yeah. I can understand that.
I'd say a long time ago, before it's become somewhat popular, would be Savage Water or Mirage was pretty rare.
Are you kidding me? Screams of a Winter Night.
Well, you had
it took
that
us
one.
Forever
I had that one.
To find that movie.
You had that, not me.
I don't think I've ever had a rare movie in my possession. I'm thinking maybe. I mean, I have a pre-cert, which is a UK term for sort of any sort of pre-early 80s movie, of Jaws 2, which is kind of a slasher movie. That's about it.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I've got, to be honest, I have got quite a lot.
I have Satan's Blade as well on VHS, but that's probably not rare.
Well, I think it's probably quite
rare.
I've got Satan's Blade on VHS. I'm trying to think what other ones I've got there. I mean, I've got Hotline on VHS. Mirage is actually what Jake, who wrote Bloody Homecoming, sent me a copy of that, an original tape. I've got Innocent Prey with PG Souls on VHS, which is kind of quite a rare one.
I had that at one point as well.
I've still got loads, actually. I'm just looking. I can see them from here, but I'm trying to think what other. Obviously, Savage Water was pretty rare tape, and I've still got that. Lots of different ones, but also I've got original a couple of the nasties, like the Revenge of the Bogeyman original tapes, the ones that were seized and destroyed. So they're kind of rarer, I kind of guess, than some of the others. But lots of different ones. But The Gathering Dust at the moment, I can count on one hand how many times I've watched VHS in the last year, probably. It's all moving over to Blu-ray, isn't it?
So, I watched it once. I didn't care for it.
Not the movie VHS. Okay, well, is that everything? Have we got any other feedback, or is that a lot?
I think that's just about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, another epic show, 2.5 hours, pretty much.
Nathan, you want to tell us what movie you're picking next?
Our Christmas special?
For our Christmas special, I'm going to take us home for the holidays.
Indeed. Well, that's going to be
exciting. And hopefully by this time, I will have seen the Silent Night, Deadly Night reboot called Silent Night, which opens or comes out on, I believe, on demand on November 30th.
Sweet. I'm watching it.
Yeah, me too. It's got a Santa with a flamethrower, so I have to see it.
Is it getting theatrical release as well?
I don't know, but I'm looking on Facebook, and Lance Vaughn, who runs Kinder Trauma, was mentioned in the New York Times about speaking about these Silent Night, Deadly Night, and this movie that's coming out. So I wasn't sure of the date, but then I just read this article, and now I know it's November 30th, and I think it's going to be probably just limited release and probably on demand.
Okay, all right. Well, be interesting.
For any of our listeners in Dublin, who I think is just me and Nigel, we're going to be getting a big screen, one night only release of Black Christmas on Saturday, the 15th of December, in the Lighthouse Cinema.
Wow!
As part of their Christmas season, and then if you're still in Christmas festive mood, 3 days later you can go and watch Gremlins.
Okay.
Oh, excellent. Awesome!
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, excellent. Well, we'll look forward to the Christmas shenanigans coming up next in a fortnight. Is it?
Yes.
Look at our
Was it 2 weeks? I can't remember. Ironed this out.
Well, we'll sort something out. We'll let you know on the Facebook group.
December 9th. December 9th. That's right.
Excellent. Okay. All right. Good stuff. Well, hope you enjoyed the Scream episode. And so we'll be back with some Christmas slashings, festive slashings fairly soon. What are we going to be playing out with, Joseph?
This is more of the soundtrack from, I guess it's Marco Beltrami, maybe.
Okay, it's not the ghastly cover versions of either Don't Fear the Reaper or Birds Fly by Icicle Works, which are...
No.
Yeah, bastardized in the soundtrack.
Just incidental music, that's all.
Okay, right, well, here we go. We'll play out with that. So thanks for listening, and see you again next time.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, sorry, Eric, you can't sing along to this one, can you, I don't think?
No.
No,
no, okay. So
I can try.
You could try. Well, let's try.
I'll play it.
No, it's okay. No,
oh, no,
okay.
I won't play it. Okay, well, I'll play it anyway. But all right, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
There's, I'm a big fan of Cox because I, you know, I'm not ashamed to say it.
I know what guys want. Oh, I'm sorry, what?